In October of 2016, WikiLeaks released the Podesta emails, over 20,000 pages of private emails from White House Chief of Staff John Podesta. This is the best example of an October surprise in our lifetimes. The Podesta emails opened the minds of millions to the fact that torturing children is a sort of sacrament to the vile creatures in control of our government. This 2016 October surprise became known as Pizzagate, and it was a deciding factor in many people voting against Hillary Clinton. Just as the Sean Combs child rape stories are dominating the public discourse, Hillary Clinton predicts an October surprise that will smear Kamala Harris, comparing it to Pizzagate.
What is something you see happening in the near future that we should be taking more seriously?
I anticipate that, you know, something will happen in October, as it always does. I anticipate there will be a full court press in October. The digital airwaves will be filled. And why does that matter? Because the press that is pro-Trump anyway, oftentimes stories are put on digitally that then are picked up by, let's say, at Fox and others. And then those stories are stories, so the mainstream press reports on them. And so that story then takes on a life of its own. There will be concerted efforts to distort and pervert Kamala Harris, who she is, what she stands for, what she's done. I mean, look, I mean, the crazy story about me running a child trafficking operation out of a basement of a pizzeria. Don't laugh. It was a huge story. It starts online, often on the dark web. It migrates. It's picked up by the pro-Trump media. It's then reported on by everybody else, which makes sure it has about 100% coverage. And people believe it. So I don't know what it's going to be, but it will be something, and we'll have to work very, very hard to make sure that it is exposed as the lie that it is.
It sounds like she is referring to the Sean Combs case, where hundreds of victims have already come forward, including dozens who were children at the time, and revealed that drugging and raping people in front of a crowd of famous people was a ritual event of the P. Diddy party.
Typically, the victim is lured into a situation where he or she is given a drink. Typically, that drink, reported by these victims, is apparently laced with something. Once that drink takes effect, the perpetrators perform all kinds of sexual acts on the victims, many times passing him or her around as other people watch and enjoy the show, and then leave the victim ashamed, confused, injured, and wondering what happened. The day will come when we will name names other than Sean Combs, and there's a lot of names. Anyone, of course, who engaged in the assault or exploitation, anyone who participated in such in any way, anyone who encouraged or facilitated this conduct, anyone who was in the room and watched it happen but made no effort to stop it, any venue or venue owner who was aware of what was going on but failed to stop it, any individual or entity who knew about the conduct and benefited from it but did nothing to report it or stop it, and any individual or entity who covered it up or helped cover it up. I would expect there are many people out there right now who are desperately searching their memories as they delete their texts and data.
Without knowing the target, Remote Viewers, the Future Forecasting Group, was assigned near future global events in the fourth quarter of 2024. Several of them saw what appeared to be a major event before the election.
I had a feeling that someone was planning a coup of some kind.
Replacing one person with another, a swap or a change, it creates shock and awe, an unexpected change, like a last-minute sleight of hand before the show ends. Like a new teammate or a new candidate.
A strong, powerful male was involved, a planned removal event.
I don't think this is Trump. This person looked younger. I wrote, you know, he reminds me of like Gavin Newsom, like that kind of look.
Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Good morning, everyone. Boy, oh boy, do we have a jam-packed broadcast for you today. I was doing a little bit of digging
about the Tampa area last night. You're not going to believe what I found after we were covering Managed Retreat yesterday. We've got some special guests joining us this morning throughout. But first and foremost, I was shocked last night. I watched Karine Jean-Pierre actually deliver something that is valuable, not just for American people, but for people all over the world. She actually delivered an important speech. Can we please roll clip one?
Israelis and Palestinians can live securely side by side in a lasting peace with equal measures of safety, opportunity, and dignity. Now, moving on to the hurricane, Hurricane Helene, President Biden and Vice President Harris continue to use every tool available to help communities devastated by Hurricane Helene.
That is the most valuable thing that we've seen from Karine Jean-Pierre for the past however many years she's been pretending to be effective. But in all seriousness, Peter Doocy, gosh, he's great, confronted her and she got really angry and stormed out. Let's roll clip two.
To the impacted areas. But instead, people want to do disinformation, misinformation, which is dangerous. Because then when folks on the ground hear that, they may not want to ask for the help that they need. That is there for them. That's our focus here.
But President Biden is fond of saying, show me your budget and I will tell you what you value. If he's got money for people in Lebanon right now without Congress having to come back, what does it say about his values? There's not enough money right now for
his
people
values,
in North Carolina who need it. That's not misinformation.
Wait. No, that is. Your whole premise of the question is misinformation, sir. It's misinformation.
I just mentioned
to you that we provided more than $200 million to folks who are impacted in the area. And I just shared with you that people are deciding not to.
President, to Congress that there's not enough money to help people.
We're talking about the SBA disaster loan.
Money for people in North Carolina.
And that's important. And people in North Carolina need that. Peter, this is nothing new. Congress comes together. They provide money, millions of dollars, for disaster relief. We're asking them to do the job that they have been doing for some time.
From a letter that President Biden sent to Johnson, McConnell, Schumer, and Jeffries. The president's letter is not misinformation. Would you agree?
No, the way you're asking me the question is misinformation. There is money that we are allocating to the impacted areas, and there's money there to help people who truly need it. There are survivors who need the funding, and it's there.
That you don't like misinformation.
I actually said we have the money available to help survivors of Hurricane Helene and also Hurricane Milton. Now there's going to be a shortfall. Right? Because we don't know how bad its Hurricane Milton is going to be. And so we're going to need additional funding.
That's exactly what I just asked about. And you said it was misinformation. Yes.
What you're asking me is why Congress needs to come back and do their job. That's what you're asking me. Congress needs to come back and do their job and provide extra assistance, extra funding to disaster relief fund. That's what Congress needs to do. And we're going to continue to urge that. You may not want that, but that's okay. That's what this president wants. And that's what the vice president wants. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, so he's asking her a question. It's exactly what she was essentially responding to. You look at his face as she's explaining to him why the way that he's asking her this question is misinformation. He's literally asking her about the funds going overseas, the funds needed for the people. The whole discourse was very confusing because she's essentially looking for ways to not answer his question. But the point that stuck out to me the most here is that now we're saying even the way in which you ask a question is misinformation. This is the first time I've heard this. She says, your whole premise of your question is misinformation. What? How can a question be misinformation? How can the premise of a question be misinformation? Because of the way that you frame something? So now you have to frame a question based on, you know, let's just talk about questioning someone. You have doubts or you have genuine concerns about something, you want to address certain aspects of something, you say, well, how about this? But what she's essentially saying is, unless you ask me a question that agrees with the official narrative without suggesting anything else may be at play or having any sort of curiosity whatsoever, it has to be based on the official narrative. And she goes on to say, again, the way that you're asking me the question is misinformation. And what we're seeing is an increase of this rhetoric of misinformation, false information. We need to censor misinformation, Tim Walz. There is no First Amendment protection for misinformation. There actually is. Hillary talking about needing to take potentially civil action against people that are spreading what she calls false information or propaganda or whatever the case may be. These are all violations of the First Amendment, obviously, but they have found a way to circumvent that by treating this as a domestic threat or a threat to public health or a threat to democracy or whatever the case may be. And it's really funny because Kamala Harris just got questioned on democracy. And her response proves that these people do not care whatsoever about democracy. They operate outside of democratic principles. Take a look at clip three.
Is democracy best served by President Biden stepping down and basically handing you a nomination? You didn't have to go through a primary process. You didn't have to fight off other contenders. That's not really the way our system was intended to work.
President Biden made a decision that I think history is going to show is rare among leaders, which was to put country before self. And I am proud to have earned the support of the vast majority of delegates and to have been elected the Democratic nominee to fight in this election over the next month for our democracy.
But I think this truncated process is why people think or say they don't really know who you are.
Look, I've been in this race for 70 days.
Okay. You didn't answer the question. You skirted around the question. She says that I think that history will show that Biden has made a decision that is rare among leaders. Yeah, you bet he did. You bet he did. He's gone outside of the democratic process. Not his choice, by the way. It was a coup. But a coup that you participated in, a coup that you potentially orchestrated. By a bare minimum participated in. So the question is about the democratic process. The question is about how you even became the nominee. And then you say that Biden put country before self. This is her, explaining away how he, not by his own will, by the looks of it, stepped down and made her the nominee. And then she says, I'm proud to have been elected the democratic nominee. You weren't elected by the people. This is not a people's democratic process that occurred. This was a coup. And then she goes on to say that she's fighting for our democracy. So just going back to the discussion about fighting for democracy, protecting democracy, mis and disinformation is a threat to our democracy. And the word that they're using, democracy, is not even a democracy. It's got nothing to do with democracy. It is 100% dictatorial power that these people are displaying. They are constantly doing things that are completely unconstitutional. Gavin Newsom trying to ban memes, unconstitutional. These people trying to lock people up for their speech, unconstitutional. And looking for ways, for example, someone going to prison for making a meme about Hillary Clinton. Oh, that was, they got around that by saying it was election interference. So they are constantly attacking the actual democracy, which, it's a republic. But if we want to talk about their concept of democracy, they have none. And so they keep hammering this concept, oh, democracy, democracy, democracy. They are actually teaching their base that democracy actually looks like a liberal dictatorship, which, by the way, many liberals want. because they're brainwashed, even though over the past few days we've been discussing that they are waking up. For example, Kamala's appearance on that sex podcast and the viewers' response, fans of that podcast saying this is just unacceptable. There are people in North Carolina who are dying right now. They need help from the government. Karine Jean-Pierre says that if you even ask that question, it's misinformation because of the way that you ask that question. We see that people in North Carolina, like that video that we showed of that young gentleman crying, saying, I support Kamala, where is she? People are waking up to the realities of the left, but not fast enough. Maybe it'll take seeing the response of the government to this next crisis, which, by the way, now they're saying, oh, Ron DeSantis is not working with Kamala Harris. He doesn't want her involved in the response. Yeah, damn straight he doesn't want her involved in the response. Because anything that this administration does via their federal government has been an absolute disaster. It's sabotaging the people. Any governor who has serious concern about their people would want this federal government run by this administration nowhere near their state, nowhere near their people, especially in a disaster situation. And right now, the situation in Florida is very serious. We have a picture four, Florida I-4 and I-95. This is someone saying everybody left last night. 6 hours, my friend made it 110 miles. State put out notice that no gas is available anywhere in the red zone. They are stuck. So there's been a lot of talk about what's going on with the fuel situation. I saw someone post a video saying what's going on. The gas stations say that they don't have any gas. They've got signs on, but they actually do. So I spoke to someone in the know yesterday, and that person advised me that Florida stores a lot of their fuel above ground. And in order, it's actually, they need to move the gas out of the region when there is a hurricane coming, because they risk the hurricane blowing that gas that's stored above ground, you know, to cities, potentially causing explosions and things of this nature on top of the hurricane. And so what they do as a rule of thumb is they move it to making sure that all the gas stations in the area are stocked up, and then they move it north, and that's what they've done in this instance as well. And so also there was some big sports match apparently over the weekend, which brought, I think they said something like 80,000 people to the area, which means that surrounding areas also were drained of fuel during that time. I mean, the state has been preparing for a few days now for this expected hurricane. And so apparently this is normal practice. This is what I'm told. And it's actually done for the safety of Floridians so that you don't end up with explosions. But generally what happens in disasters is, and I'm absolutely not placing the blame on anyone here, I'm just saying that what happens in disasters is people wait until the last minute to get their fuel or whatever. And so my advice, you know, in my channels has just been, you know, for everyone, doesn't matter where you are, the environment right now is so volatile heading up to this election. You don't know what will happen next. Biden's about to declare a national climate emergency. We'll take a look at that in a moment. After saying yesterday that we're going to create more weather events and create more severe events, it's just, you know, Freudian slip. I don't know. But, you know, people should really be prepared with food, with water, with communications, with fuel. Get extra fuel if you can for your households. Be ready for anything this next month is basically what I'm saying. But Biden is declaring a national climate emergency based on these manufactured weather events, at a bare minimum, messing with the weather, if not completely manufacturing this stuff, but, you know, at a bare minimum, making these weather events stronger. We're being told now, I was watching the Weather Channel in the morning, they're saying that the last time that a hurricane of this nature has been seen going from the Gulf to the east, this strength, they said, was in the late 1800s. So this is unprecedented, unprecedented. I believe that now it's sustained winds of 180 miles per hour, if not even higher, but that's what I saw this morning. And we're now at Cat 5. It's very, very serious as people are rushing to leave the state, and there's roadblocks everywhere. And again, just unprecedented, the strength and the path of this hurricane from everywhere that I'm seeing. Again, Weather Channel says haven't seen it since the 1800s. Now, of course, they're going to amplify that climate change is the problem and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, it's going to be chaotic. And so absolutely praying for everyone trying to leave the region. I'm told there's, you know, some people are saying go south. Some people are saying that's not a safe option. Apparently the fuel is further up north. All I'm trying to say is wherever you are, try to prepare as much as possible because we just don't know what's going to happen. But Biden in clip 5 is declaring a national climate emergency. Let's take a look at that.
The White House telling Fox Business it's now considering declaring a national climate emergency. Oh. But that's a climate crisis to you, Mark. The AP, which sets the standards for newsrooms across the country, they're urging Americans to use the term climate crisis to address the current situation. This is all troubling, but if the president declares a climate emergency, what impact does that have?
Well, I mean, this is the serious story of the today. NBC News has reported that if Joe Biden declares a national climate emergency, he would have COVID-like powers under that emergency. And they also compared the emergency powers to the 9/11 emergency powers. The Center for Biological Diversity has estimated Joe Biden would get about 130 wartime-like powers by which to bypass democracy and impose the Green New Deal on America without a single vote of Congress. This is truly this should be a Halloween story, not a story for Earth Day. This is a truly frightening story, and he might just be desperate enough to do it. This is being widely reported in the media. The Biden White House is leaking this out. This might happen, and this is going to give Joe Biden these kind of, you want to say the word, dictatorial powers. He doesn't need no stinking democracy to impose the Green New Deal if he does this.
So that is an extremely, extremely serious situation, because giving someone like Obama, Biden, wartime-like powers right before the election with 130 wartime-like powers, 9/11 emergency powers, COVID-like powers, and the ability to impose the Green New Deal prior to the election. Well, let me just say, Trump has been very, very open about the fact that climate change, as we're being told about climate change, is a complete scam, which it is. It is, as we've discussed many times, the driving force behind Agenda 2030, because the pandemic narrative for the time being has run out, even though they're trying to link it with climate change. And so when we look at relocating people into smart cities, when we look at managed retreat, when we look at hooking everyone up to the hive mind, digital ID because cash is contributing to climate change, and, you know, the exchange of money between your hand and someone else's hand is dangerous because of pandemics, and you going to the park with your children is potentially going to cause pandemics because now you're interacting with nature. And you look at all of these convoluted explanations for why they need to lock you up forever, essentially, like the Melbourne experiment. United Nations is very proud of that one. We'll lock everyone up forever because it was so good doing it for 262 days in the city of Melbourne during COVID. It was great for the climate. Let's do it forever. That's literally, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what they say. And so when you look at how serious Agenda 2030 and the climate aspect to achieving Agenda 2030 is, and you get someone like Trump coming in and saying this is a scam, and if I'm not mistaken, J.D. Vance is very much of that opinion as well, well, you need to do whatever is possible to get this through before the possibility of Trump becoming president happens. Just like digital ID being rushed through by Biden at the moment. There are all of these aspects of Agenda 2030 which I don't think Trump is for, just based on the things that he said. Again, I'll repeat, no central bank digital currency, no EV mandate, climate change is a scam. These things are directly opposed to Agenda 2030. So when you have a very short window before you are potentially, you know, going to be either out of office or exposed for trying to rig another election? Perhaps, I don't know. When you have a very short window to get this stuff done before Agenda 2030 is potentially thrown out once and for all, or at least by Trump, of course you are going to utilize every single tool at your disposal to accelerate that and have a reason to do it, including manufacturing weather crises, including manipulating the weather, including potentially sending out a special plane to redirect or change the strength of a hurricane or change the course of a hurricane into a red region that just so happens to be probably voting for Trump. And then you go, oh, we have a national climate emergency, and guess what? I have wartime-like powers, and oh, maybe we're going to have more of these climate emergencies prior to the election. Maybe we're just going to have hurricanes in every red state. Who knows? Because of climate change, guys. This is extremely, extremely serious. I really, really hope that people understand how hell-bent the globalists are on implementing Agenda 2030, how hell-bent they are on getting all of these 17 sustainable development goals, which are actually death goals for humanity. I hope people realize how serious they are about this. And if they fail at this point, it will be very, very hard for them to get back on track with that. If they have a president like President Trump who comes out and says, this is a scam. Do you remember the United Nations lawyer, Paolo Gauletti, who came out and said the United Nations is terrified of President Trump, terrified of another term? The UN's over if Trump comes back in, essentially. Because he's not a globalist, and I am a globalist, he says. But Trump is not a globalist. He's you know, a nationalist. And when you're not a globalist, that means you're not going along with the global agenda of Agenda 2030, which means they can't get to their goals of transhumanism without this climate agenda. It will set them back decades, decades. And I think that that may be the reason why they're declaring a climate emergency right now. We'll talk more about this on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I do not put it past this administration, these people that are currently destroying the country, to declare a climate emergency in order to interfere or suspend the election. You know, more weather events, absolute chaos, catastrophes everywhere. Can you put anything past them? You really can't, especially if Biden is seeking wartime powers, 130 wartime-like powers because of a climate emergency. And you see, Kamala Harris is behaving like the president. Joe Biden is clearly not running this country, and they are pulling out every single tool that they have in their toolkit ahead of the election to disrupt, potentially disrupt the election, to potentially give themselves, you know, we're maybe heading into a World War III, we've got a climate emergency, and, you know, an Asian state's just started testing people at an airport for Marburg. We'll talk about that in a second. Potential pandemics. All of these things that are actually really, really huge things, not in the sense that they're real, but in the sense that a declaration of this nature gives them unprecedented power. So God only knows what they're going to do ahead of this election, whether, and I mean in terms of what they're going to orchestrate and what powers they're going to give themselves. And there is no democratic process where any of this is concerned. There is no correct process where any of this is concerned. Just like Kamala running around pretending like she's president, she's not the one that should be at the disaster sites. It should be Joe Biden. If he's not capable, then the 25th Amendment applies, but that hasn't been enacted. So informally, without due process, Kamala Harris is out here acting like the president, going to disaster response places, speaking on, you know, albeit reading from a script very uncomfortably because she doesn't know what she's talking about, but speaking about foreign wars, speaking about what the U.S. response is going to be, so on and so forth, like she's the current president. At the same time, while she's behaving like the president, moving away from the failures of this current administration, because I'm just a VP. And on 60 Minutes, she says, we're going to adapt. I think the marks of a good leader is someone who adapts, because he said the reason, you know, a lot of people feel like they don't know you, you've backflipped on fracking, you've backflipped on this, that, and the other. And she says, oh, it's just, you know, adapting and listening to the people on the ground and garnering consensus. This is why she keeps changing her very staunch views on seizing your weapons via a violation of the Second Amendment to, no, no, you can keep your weapons. I have a Glock. Okay. But nonetheless, this woman is behaving like the president whilst also distancing herself from the failures of the current administration and still performing the failures of the current administration when it comes to actual disaster response, when it comes to actually doing something about the border, when it comes to actually doing something about the economy, actually ending wars. It's amazing to watch. It's been amazing in the worst possible way to watch. So an Asian state has started testing airport arrivals for a killer disease. This is Marburg now. Kazakhstan has taken steps to prevent the introduction and spread of Marburg virus, citing a WHO warning. Kazakhstan has taken steps to prevent Marburg. Marburg, which is not airborne, it's not going to spread on a flight. And the health authorities in Kazakhstan have introduced the mandatory body temperature checks of passengers arriving in the country's airports from abroad, according to a statement on Monday. This comes amid an outbreak of a highly infectious and potentially lethal disease in Africa. So my understanding of Marburg, and I could be wrong here, but from the doctors that I've spoken with, they've all said that Marburg, Ebola, these types of things are only contagious through body fluid. You don't just, you know, sneeze in one household and all of a sudden the Marburg travels to the other household. It's coming in contact with bodily fluids like blood or vomit, or I won't go on. You understand my point. And so they're already starting to temperature test people in Kazakhstan. Now, you may say, oh, well, that's really, really far away. Why does that matter? It actually matters because the WHO and the UN were recently given additional powers through the International Health Regulations amendments that were agreed to earlier this year. And all member states are a part of it. And if two member states say, no, we don't agree, but the others do, they just need majority vote. And then it applies to all member states. I don't understand why the countries that are opposed to the international health regulations, why they didn't just exit the WHO. Just exit. And the United Nations, through their Pact for the Future and their emergency platform, where they say that essentially Guterres becomes a dictator of the world if there is something like a black swan event, so on and so forth. So what's happening right now is you have countries' leaders giving themselves dictatorial powers, like Keir Starmer locking people up for memes, and, you know, in Australia, mis- and disinformation laws where people could potentially go to prison for posting something that a bunch of women, I'm not even kidding, it's just these a bunch of women who, you know, let me just say it. I don't like women in leadership who are drunk on power trying to tell me what to do. I don't think women should run countries. I don't think that that's a wise decision. And that is my opinion as a woman. So a bunch of women are going to be telling Australians what they can and can't post online, and meanwhile not applying those same standards to the mainstream media. The government's exempt, you know, schools are exempt. It's only really independent media and regular people that are going to be subjected to these laws. So what we're seeing is every single country giving themselves more and more dictatorial power whilst simultaneously signing up to these globalist one world government agreements like the UN Pact for the Future, like the UN an emergency platform, like the WHO IHR amendments. They've now again reintroduced the discussions around their pandemic treaty or pandemic plan, or, you know, they keep changing the name to purposely make it confusing. And I'm sure someone's paid a lot of money in the WHO to keep thinking about new names that they're going to call it. You know, that's their job. They sit there and think tanks, you know, get together. What are we going to call it now? Like when they change the name of monkeypox because it's apparently offensive to Africans. No one's thinking of Africans when we're thinking of monkeys. That's you that said that, WHO. You're the racists, not us. None of us said monkeypox. That sounds like Africans. What kind of crap is that? It's a WHO decision that monkeypox makes people think about Africans. That is horrible. So anyway, they are reintroducing their pandemic plan. And these people that are paid ridiculous amounts of money, taxpayer money from the US, from Australia, from UK, from every Western nation, from countries that aren't Western nations, giving hundreds of millions of dollars to the WHO so that they can get these think tanks together to, you know, because you have the lower level WHO people, and I'm just thinking that it goes like they sit around a table and they talk about how they can come up with equitable names for all of these pandemic preparedness plans. What's something that's fair and equitable and makes everyone feel like an equal? That's certainly what FEMA's just done, actually. We want to play that. We want to play the FEMA equity meeting. Let's take a look at how all of these woke people from these globalist institutions and places like, because it filters down, right? WHO has this approach, UN has this approach, and then it filters down through their NGOs, and then it bleeds into these all of these other institutions as well, and then the heads of state are also thinking in this manner, and then obviously the federal agencies are thinking in this matter. And basically FEMA says that you get priority only and assistance if you're gay. That's the policy according to this FEMA equity meeting. Let's go ahead and roll clip 7.
Sparked a few things in my mind thinking about preparedness and how you said, you know, LGBTQIA people and people who have been disadvantaged already are struggling. They already have their own things to deal with. So you add a disaster on top of that, it's just compounding on itself. And I think that is maybe the why of why we're having these discussions, is because it isn't being talked about. It isn't being socialized. We're not paying attention to this community. Thank you so much. Maggie.
Thank you. Yeah, there are a couple of things that are intersecting in my mind here. One of them is the culture of emergency management as an organization, as an industry in the United States specifically, not abroad. This has, and my cat sometimes does this, she gets really loud suddenly, so you'll have to just allow for the little meowing in the background. The shift that we're seeing right now is a shift in emergency management from utilitarian principles, where everything is designed for the greatest good for the greatest amount of people, to disaster equity. But we have to do more, right? And so this topic is intersecting, I think, with a number of other topics where we have to look at policies and understand to what extent they have disadvantaged communities that had less assets, communities that had pre-existing vulnerabilities in accessing disaster-related recovery supports.
So something that you just said is going to be important later when I show you what I found about the Tampa region and managed retreat and the focus on communities that have less assets and equity and all of this sort of stuff. Like I said to you yesterday, this is incredibly convoluted stuff, but these leftists are completely convinced of this because, again, I always say it comes down from the UN, down through the NGOs, and eventually becomes policy, and then this culture bleeds into these organizations. So, of course, Maggie, Jerry, she, her, has a cat meowing in the background. Of course she does. And this is the way that a lot of, if you watch these meetings of these, you know, organizations and a lot of these, you know, any type of federal government, when they're talking about equity or anything like that, they always have really quirky people who believe that their cause is the most important and they're all victims and we need to all become victims because that's the way that we'll achieve socialism, and they don't even understand that we're heading to socialism that way. By constantly thinking you're a victim, you will become trapped in a system of control. But that's what they do. And, you know, FEMA, the guy with the FEMA in the background, oh, the LGBT, LMNOP, QRS, TUV community is already struggling. And so these disasters just make it worse because no other American is struggling. No other person is struggling. No one is out there working two jobs trying to just feed their children because the Biden administration has completely destroyed the economy. The COVID pandemic and the after effects of it have completely destroyed economies worldwide. None of that has to do with anything. If regular Americans aren't struggling, they don't need the help. The help needs to go to Lebanon, Israel, Ukraine, and gay people. Got it? They're the only victims. The alphabet community is the only victim. American, white Americans who earn a lot of money are not victims here. And you know what? In all of these disaster preparation documents and war games and things that I found, which I'll show you a bit later, they actually constantly make a point. I even watched some of their webinars last night. This stuff will make your ears bleed. I watched it because it's important to advise people of what's actually going on, what these city meetings and NGOs and all of these people are actually talking about and believe, so that you know how they're going to achieve this insane plan that they have for managed retreat and things of this nature, and how we actually get people believing that there's a climate change catastrophe, so on and so forth. But basically they go and they say white people are more advantaged, they're less affected because they have more money and they might not, you know, live in an area that's as affected by climate change. And therefore, the people of other races, for example, black people, deserve more assistance. And I just find that to be such an incredibly racist thing, because why shouldn't black people be as successful as everyone else? Why are you just slapping a label on that they're just not as successful? And if they're not, how do we make them more successful rather than turning them into socialist victims? I absolutely despise this mentality of treating people who aren't doing as well as, oh, they're just victims. How do we just become better? Let's talk about becoming better. And this is why I think they hate Trump so much. Another reason why they hate Trump so much. Because he's not sitting here telling everyone they're a victim. He's telling people to rise above. He's telling people all of this is a scam. We don't need to go along with this. We need to be better. We need to be prosperous. We're going to make this country prosperous. Every single one of you can succeed if you so wish. This is just the complete opposite of what these people think. And I really think they're just waiting for a moment where Biden declares, like, imagine those people that you just watched. They're just waiting for the moment that Biden declares a national climate emergency so that they have more purpose in their life to say, well, now the gay people are struggling even more. Now I have an even stronger victim purpose. Let me go out and social justice warrior this whole thing out for the many, many lettered community, because they are struggling. And I was right all along. I've been justified now that the federal government has validated that we actually do have a climate emergency. We do have a problem with equity. We do have a problem with white supremacy. And now they're fueled because they're so depressed. They really do not actually have a real purpose in life other than to be victims and perpetual victimhood. And so now they have something, the next dopamine hit, to chase the next justification of their victimhood. This is what these people are like. I'm not saying these specific people in that video. I'm talking about social justice warriors as a whole. This is what they're like. Their purpose is to be validated by the government, and they'll be the first candidates for a UBI when it's proposed. They'll be the first candidates to say, yep, nope, giving up my gas vehicle. You need to give up your gas vehicle as well. Just like they told you that they want you in prison. If you don't wear a mask, next it'll be you need to go to prison because you have a gas vehicle. You need to go to prison if you travel 15 minutes outside of your smart city because you're causing climate change and the LGBTQ, IXP community and black people and Mexicans and Venezuelans and all these people are negatively impacted by your traveling outside of your 15 minutes, you white supremacist scumbag that dared to be successful and provide for your own family without sucking the government teat. How dare you? While we're all here on a UBI, we've been the playing field's been leveled. Do you know these people beg for the leveling of the playing field? They don't want you successful. They want a leveling. They want everyone to be as mediocre as one another. That's what they consider actual equity and justice. That's what Kamala Harris represents. She represents a leveling of the playing field where no one is successful but the self-proclaimed elites, because they're too important. Like John Kerry, what I do is too important. That's why I have to keep flying in my private jet while you eat crickets and, you know, squashed flies. I'm too important. I gotta do it. But everyone else, you're all equal. Oh, finally, I'm not a victim anymore because I've been made equal by the establishment that seeks to put me in poverty and make me comply and make me feel good while I comply with every single thing that they want me to do, which is ultimately killing me. Give me more injections, more mRNA in my lettuce, more. Well, no, less crickets, actually, because they want to starve me. But it's for my own good. Maybe I can get an injection to help me feel full. And, yeah, gosh, I feel like I may be turning into a cyborg, but that's okay, because at least I'm an equity cyborg. They are destroying people's brains. And these people are buying into it. And I know I've gone off on a huge tangent, but this mentality, we've got to help these liberals snap out of it as they're realizing just how much this government doesn't care about them. We have to let them snap out of it. Help them snap out of it, rather. You know, that guy, I keep thinking back to him, that guy that was crying last week from North Carolina saying, I'm a huge Kamala Harris supporter. I can't believe how she's just deserted us here. Why is she not helping? Why is she not doing more? I really hope that conservatives flooded his comments with support, because this is how we do it. We don't attack. With support and you know, we've been trying to tell you this administration doesn't care about you. I promise you life will be better if you have conservative leadership. Lead by example. Bring them over. Bring them over. I am a little bit of a bleeding heart when it comes to these things. But I believe in taking the opportunity when someone has... We may play that. I believe in taking the opportunity when someone has woken up or is realizing that the people that you thought were on your side that keep you in perpetual victimhood will actually eat you alive given the chance. I believe that we should take that opportunity to tell those people the truth because they're in pain. They realize they've been abandoned. And the reality is the people that are helping with the disaster situation right now, conservatives, churches, Trump supporters, all the people that they keep telling these liberals are coming for them, are going to, you know, start a civil war. If that was true, if that was really in the hearts of conservatives, they would let these people just suffer. But they don't. It's not in our nature. We are humanity-driven. We are truth-driven people. Let's play a little bit of that guy.
Day six. And I just can't help but to, I mean, I literally am just crying for my people and for, I mean,
Like, how could the government do us like this? And how could the whole country just forget about us? Like, it's not enough. What is being done is not enough. I mean, there are entire communities that have been just decimated. There is, I mean, where is our government? I mean, for Kamala, and I am an avid supporter, for her to stand in Florida today and make a statement. Where is our government? Where's the president? Where is that bitch? I mean, these people are so hardworking. They have.
We can end it there.
Struggled.
That's you're watching a real time reality, a real time liberal reality check. And I don't hate these people. I hate the victimhood that they've bought into. And the way to free ourselves from tyranny, apart from just waiting for one person to save the day, is to become more independent. And I think that that's a good thing that's happening. To not depend on the government for absolutely everything. To understand that they are working towards our destruction. And to understand the end game of the agendas, all of the varying agendas when it comes to equity, climate change, disaster response, managed retreat, cutting off your access to gas-powered vehicles, cutting off your electricity, driving you into slavery, pushing you to live out your life digitally instead of real life, fracturing your relationships by making everyone hate each other and not trust each other. I mean, it really goes on. We'll touch on all of that a little bit later again, but after the break, we've got Michael Yon, war correspondent, joining us. A powerful segment coming up. Don't go anywhere. He's going to talk to us about what we can expect, his take on the hurricanes, and more. We'll be right back.
I want to state this again, because I don't like talking about myself every day on the show and what's happening, but we're forced to because, as you've seen, we're national news, international news. If they can take us down, they set the precedent to take everyone else down. Media Matters, run by George Soros, the admitted Nazi collaborator, he said that on 60 Minutes. The news says that's a conspiracy theory.
My understanding is that you went out with this protector of yours who swore that you were his adopted godson.
Yes, yes.
Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews.
That's right.
George Soros' Media Matters, they created a list of sites that post some of my content on YouTube. And here it is. And most of these I never even heard of. And they said, oh, look, they're posting his content, take them down. And YouTube did. I mean, when Media Matters snaps its fingers and says, jump, Google, a $1 trillion company, ask how high.
The potential censorship of free speech, I think, goes to the core of our country's freedoms.
Take Alex Jones' platform that he talks about away. I ask that you make certain he can't rebuild.
Now, I can show you the headlines where they say they want to own the name Alex Jones. They want to own Real Alex Jones on X. They admit they want to set that precedent.
The whole idea of now we are going to have corporations censor speech based upon their definition of fake news, based on their definition of hate speech, is opening up a Pandora's box.
I hope that we never see someone like him again.
And if you're out there right now and you're one of Alex Jones's audience members and you're considering giving him money, I just want you to know that based on the jury's verdict today, it's not a very good bet.
Take him out of this discourse, of this misinformation, of this peddling of lies, and make sure he can't do it again.
The Justice Department, back to deep state, has launched a new vicious attack on myself and InfoWars. They're attempting to seize control of operations October 17th because they know coming up on November 13th, InfoWars is going up for sale at auction, and they're worried patriots are going to buy it, and the operation will continue on. They are pulling all the stops, have introduced a lawsuit, the Democrat Party back group, in Travis County with judges they think they control. They literally, and this has been adjudicated, the Supreme Court, the Texas Supreme Court, the Fifth Circuit, all of it, are saying they own my name and own me, and that, like I'm a corporation, they want a receiver
appointed that owns me forever. That's why they didn't want to settle. They wanted it to be non-dischargeable. And when they shut down InfoWars, if they're successful, it doesn't matter. Anything but $1.5 billion, they say they own me.
What was an indentured servant? If I'm an English youth and want to get to America, I will sign a contract saying that I will give 7 years of labor to a master who will pay my the price of a ticket to get across the Atlantic on a ship. But when I sign that contract, I'm in for 7 years of extremely tough labor. I might not survive it because that master, I'm just a piece of property. He can do with me what he wants. I don't work hard enough, he can beat me. If he doesn't like the way I work, he can sell me to a neighbor.
Indentured servants accounted for three-quarters of the 130,000 English who came to the Chesapeake in the 1600s.
Now, the courts have all ruled you can't do this. It's cut and dry. But they don't care because they believe they control the courts in Travis County, which they're now filing in. The Democratic Party has officially. They want me off the air when President Trump is president-elect. And they're moving to shut us down now on October 17th. I'll sleep on somebody's couch and do this broadcast. But the issue is, if I don't fight them in federal court and state court now, they will absolutely hamstring what I'm doing if they're successful and set this dangerous precedent. I've been up here like a baby bird chirping, begging for food because I don't want to give up. And I hate begging, but I hate losing to the New World Order when we're so close to victory. A lot worse. Three words, real. AlexJones.com. Go make a $5, $10, $100, $200, $1,000 donation to the First Amendment.
Hopefully by now everyone understands the precedent that was set with Julian Assange, and we played some of what he spoke about at the first public speech that he did since his release. Understanding the power of foreign governments to extradite people and charge them even though the crime wasn't committed in their nation. They're not even a national, for example. We saw that with Keir Starmer threatening to extradite people to bring them to the UK to prosecute them for memes and opinions. We've seen that in the case of lawyer Rainer Fuhlmich, where there wasn't even an extradition treaty between Mexico and Germany, and yet he was kidnapped effectively from Mexico, taken to Germany for a trial where he is not guilty of any crime. And this is after his huge efforts to expose the New World Order and the very few that are in control of mostly the whole world. And the fact that every single government, he says, is actually running like a corporation. They're not real governments. And they're all moving towards this one goal of one world government. This is why they're all co-opted. And so we look at that precedent and we say, my goodness, they did it with Assange. Now they're trying to do it with other people. They're trying to do it for regular meme sharers in other countries. And now they're trying to do it with Alex Jones. You just all saw that video where he explains what's going on with him, where they're essentially trying to, what, own him as a slave? But this is how they see all of us. They see every single person who opposes them, who speaks freely, who has independent thought, as slaves that need to be owned and managed. And let me tell you that if they get away with this with Alex, if we don't all band together and support him, that we face the same fate. Just like because they got away with it with Assange, although he is working to reverse, to make changes to make sure that this never happens to anyone again. But just like they got away with it with Assange, they now say, oh, if you're in the UK, if you're, sorry, in, you know, China and you're saying offensive things about the UK, we'll extradite you and charge you here. Oh, Rainer Fuhlmich, we can just kidnap him and bring him over when no crime's committed. Imagine what they're going to do to the American people when there is such an attack on free speech if they get away with this when it comes to Alex. And so my support for InfoWars is two-pronged. Number one, it is, I believe, one of the most important broadcasts in the world, and I'm not exaggerating. This is the this is where you get information that no one else is covering from angles that no one else is covering. The people here are incredibly well informed. They understand the agenda back to front, and they will warn you well ahead of time, as Alex has proven time and time and time again over decades, of what is coming. And now, at such a crucial point in human history, where more people are waking up to the one world government agenda, more people are listening. So now is such an important time to support InfoWars for that reason. And also, it's actually three reasons. Also, because Alex Jones has given up so much in servitude of humanity to wake them up. He's been attacked. He's been the one that has taken all these blows for all of us. And also because if we don't, then it'll be us next. That's the last reason, the least important reason in my opinion, but nonetheless very important for people to realize. If you're going to at least think of it from a selfish perspective, realize that this is the precedent for all of us. I'm asking everyone today to go to the alexjonesstore.com, buy the fundraiser t-shirt, buy some sort of a t-shirt, buy a ball cap. Every time you buy something, you get a, it's all explained how it works there on the website. Every $1 is 5 entries. You can get some of the sea moss gummies. You can try them for 55% off. Go to the store and support. Get yourself high quality products as well. The t-shirts are great, great material. Get the InfoWars fundraiser t-shirt. That Never Surrender shirt is fantastic. I'm going to buy it myself. Support InfoWars as much as you possibly can right now, because today it's Alex, tomorrow it's you. I mean that. They've demonstrated that this is their game plan. This is how they play. Today it's Julian Assange. The next day, it's anyone criticizing the UK government outside of the UK. And whether they successfully did that or not, of course, there was backlash and Americans said, no, we have a First Amendment, screw you. That's this time around. But what about as they increase their control and increase their control and increase their control? Eventually, no one will be allowed to speak freely unless we stand up for free speech with everything that we have today. And free speech is where it starts. If we don't have free speech, then we can't fight back at all. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today, please. Michael Yon is currently in Thailand. He's been waiting patiently. Michael, wonderful to see you today. For all who may not know him, he's a war correspondent, former Green Beret. He's been reporting on the various aspects of this agenda from multiple countries. His analysis is absolutely spot on, and it's really, really great to have him here with us. Michael, thank you.
Hey, Maria. Yeah, I'm in Thailand. I'm not on vacation. I'm actually here in meetings. As you know, I don't really go on vacations. I don't really remember what those are. But I'm actually been meeting here with Doug Casey, the famous gold expert. And we've spent many days together now. In fact, we just got back from dinner. He was just sitting right here, actually. And so because people keep asking, what should they do? So I'm more focusing now on those next lines of effort. What should people actually do? So I'm talking about things like that. That's one of the reasons I'm in Thailand right now and then returning to the United States. But as you know, I'm actually from Florida. I'm from Central Florida. I'm from Polk County, a place that's about to be hit by this hurricane. And so I've been, talking on the phone with my friends and family quite a lot. Obviously, if it hits as a Category 5 hurricane, that means catastrophic destruction. It's going to wipe out potentially entire towns, as a Category 5 will do. They don't just damage towns. Category 5 erases towns. And so that's what we're potentially looking at. As you know, there's a lot of reports that people can't get fuel in Florida. That was true from one of my friends in Winter Haven yesterday. He had to go outside of Winter Haven, Florida. Winter Haven is in Polk County. And again, that's where I grew up. But interestingly, there's a lot of reports people are having problems getting gasoline on, for instance, on I-75. I happen to know somebody who owns many gas stations along I-75. And this person, actually, I introduced you to somebody some hours ago, Maria, and I think you talked with that
yes,
person.
Yes, I did. I spoke about it. I spoke about it. I spoke about it earlier, Michael, and the fact that why the fuel was moved. It has to be moved because it's stored above ground. People were given notice in advance to get extra fuel. People don't always listen to that. Some people went to get more, but it was already out by that time. And so this is, you know, if they don't move it out of the area, then they risk the hurricane coming through and taking the gas with it and potentially causing explosions. So we kind of understand that. And that's why I said, you know, true to your point, what people should be doing, it doesn't matter where you are right now, in my opinion, you should be having food, water, gas, you know, extra gas cans, all of that sort of stuff is vital. But do go on, Michael.
Right. As everybody, I think, especially people who watch InfoWars. So I'm kind of preaching to the choir. I understand that with InfoWars listeners, that you know the best time to plan for an emergency is when times are very boring, right? When it seems like nothing ever happens, that's when obviously we prepare. Of course, the vast majority of people listening to InfoWars, unless they just started like an hour ago, know that you should be highly prepared. So as you know, I think Florida is going to sustain severe devastation. And so, again, I'll be keeping lines open with family and friends in the affected areas as it unfolds. And if it's really horrific, then I'll have to leave Asia and return by any means available back to Florida to help. You know, that's terrain that I'm very familiar with. I mean, I grew up there. I love Florida, and it's terrible to see this happen.
Well, let me ask you, Michael, because there's a lot of people talking about the fact, I even heard it on the Weather Channel this morning, that this is unprecedented for a hurricane to start in the Gulf and move east like this. It's already sustained winds at 180 miles per hour. They're saying this is truly unprecedented.
Well, yeah, as you know, I mean, if this strikes Tampa, CENTCOM headquarters is there. Of course, that's where Eric Carrillo. I know Eric Carrillo. He's the commander of CENTCOM. I spent 5 months in combat with Eric. I think a lot of that base will be wiped out, obviously, or severely damaged. Of course, CENTCOM, Central Command, is the theater command that is operating the war in the Middle East, which is, you know, of course, sending our assets to defend the magical elves of Israel while our people are dying up in North Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee right now and about to be slammed in Florida. Our military is off running around in Ukraine. I think the listeners on InfoWars don't need to be told this, how important it is. That, you know, by the way, for people that don't know me at all, I spend a great deal of time down in places like the Darien Gap and Panama and the jungle down there watching the invasions coming across through Colombia. I've been on the Colombia side as well. Colombia, as in Colombia, South Carolina. I mean, South America, not South Carolina. And I've been across the entire southern border, all the way from SpaceX to San Diego. SpaceX, of course, is where the Rio Grande. SpaceX is situated on the Mexico border, where the Rio Grande dumps into the Gulf of Mexico. So I've been across that entire border. We're being invaded. We don't actually have a border. Nobody knows how many people have come through. This is an invasion. You know, I don't even put up links to anybody anymore who calls these illegal immigrants or you know, uncontrolled immigration or whatever. This is not immigration. This is war. This is actual war. We're being overwhelmed. You know, again, I'm in Thailand now, by the way. There's marijuana stores everywhere here now. They weren't even here 2 years ago, right? 2 years ago, to my knowledge, there were no marijuana stores. Now I'm told by a lawyer I had dinner with tonight with Doug Casey, I'm told that there is 9,400 marijuana stores registered in Thailand now.
Let me ask you that, Michael, because I know this is a really controversial topic for a lot of people, and people get really upset when you talk about it. Can I ask you, what is the effect on the society having that many marijuana stores around?
Well, I mean, of course, people immediately go, what about alcohol? Yeah, that too. And they'll say, what about prescription drugs? That too, right? We're under a pharmacological attack, right? We're under many forms of attack. One will be food. For instance, this hurricane, if it continues on this direction, is going to affect the national fertilizer supply, phosphate, which is mined in Polk County, Florida, where I grew up. It's huge. So we're being attacked by many methods here. One is, obviously economically. Our military is now woke. They keep running ships into the ground and that sort of thing. Our military is not the same military that I served in. It's not the same military that many people watching this served in. Something is clearly wrong with it. It is clearly turning against us. We have no borders. We have these everywhere. I've been all over the United States. I mean, you won't believe how much I've traveled around the United States. I went to school in California. I mean, college. Also, I was in the Army. I went to a language school out there. I spent like 2 years in California. I grew up in Florida, went to school in Florida, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Ohio. I've lived all over the country and traveled in great detail, and I've watched my own country become a drug addict. Now, I've spent most of my life overseas. I spent the vast majority of my life now in almost 100 countries. And when I fly back to the United States, I see a bunch of drug addicts, and I see people defending, that they should be able to have freedom and all this. I get it. I totally get it. But I look at this from a war perspective. War is what I do. War is what I live in all over the world, many different types of war. The highest form of warfare is information warfare, InfoWars. Coincidentally, the name of the show, InfoWars, that is by far the highest form of warfare. I watched the Groningen gas field in northern Netherlands, the biggest gas field in Europe. I was on with Jordan Peterson, and I was predicting that they were going to close the Groningen gas field, the biggest gas field in Europe, using nothing but information war, an information war strike, and they did it. Now, when I was saying I think they're going to close the Groningen gas field in Netherlands, people were like, they'll never do that. That's the biggest gas field in Europe. That will be incredibly deleterious to the Dutch economy and Europe. And I'm like, you get it now. They will do it. And they did it. I was there with Misako Ganaha at BASF in Germany twice before Nord Stream was hit. Nord Stream is the pipeline or pipelines that come from Russia to Germany. And they feed, the BASF, the biggest chemical company in the world. Misako and I were there twice before the hit on Nord Stream. The last time we were there was 12 days before the Nord Stream was attacked, and we were publishing. We think Nord Stream is going to be, something's going to happen to it. I didn't know it would be kinetic with explosives. I thought it might be a cyber attack. I had no idea, but I just thought that they would take it down. Why did I think that? Are these and so many other predictions accurate? It's because we know what the enemy's doing, because like Alex says all the time, and you say, we just pay attention to what they say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they'll publish it all. They'll tell you, we're going to do a managed retreat over here. We're going to relocate people here. Oh, because of climate disasters, now you can't live here anymore. Oh, Biden's declaring a climate emergency. Oh, just in time for the UN to, embed their processes when you have a candidate that's absolutely against the UN globalist agenda. And I mean, it just makes perfect sense to me, Michael, but I am curious because I wanted to ask you about this specifically. We covered this on yesterday's broadcast. A church in Texas experienced two men of Middle Eastern appearance. Apparently a rock was put behind a door to perhaps stop the exit point, and then they pulled out what appeared to be an AR-15 style gun, and then the armed security guards, I didn't know churches had armed security, but okay, some sort of armed security basically fired off warning shots and they disappeared. Now, this is unprecedented to be happening in Texas. Obviously, this is where so many of these illegals are coming across the border. What do you make of this situation and the FBI and Department of Homeland Security saying basically expect terrorists, be on high alert for terrorist attacks?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I spend a great deal of time in Texas. And again, this is for you and me and Alex and the people watching Alex Jones Show, we're being invaded. And I'm down there in the Darien Gap all the time. I spend months down there watching Iranians come through, watching Egyptians and people from all over the world, about 150 countries or so. I mean, Somalis, Haitians, I've seen half of Haiti go through there, it seems like. Cubans, I mean, massive numbers of Cubans. And they're just coming through completely unchecked. Now, by the time they make it up to Texas and Arizona, New Mexico, California, I'm watching there. Like, for instance, in Arizona, I've watched so many Chinese and others come through, and I'm this close. I'm like 5-10 feet away. And the Border Patrol is just asking for their name and their birthday. They don't even ask them for their ID. They don't ask them for their passport. They're just name, birthday. That's it. or maybe it was Naaman. It's on my videos, right?
So Michael, like, what I want to analyze with you is I'm looking at this situation. I'm saying, okay, so the current administration has let these people in. We have that information about serious weaponry coming across the border recently, apparently intended to be used for Trump. We have that takes some coordination with serious people in power to bring that sort of weaponry across the border. And so now, is this an activation of sleeper cells? Is this just, you know, people from hostile countries watching America's involvement in what's happening in the Middle East and being, you know, really unhappy about it and wanting revenge? Is it the people that are just want to see America fall now being activated? I mean, maybe this was a lone wolf incident, or I'm sorry, not lone wolf because there were two people, but maybe this is an isolated incident, or are we going to see more of this? And what are the motives here? And is the current administration involved?
Well, you know, that's an interesting line of, not just a question, but a line of thought that requires some good discussion. You know, in Operation Burning Edge, which is our team that Ann Vanner Steele, Masako Ganaha, and some other teammates, we took people like Brett Weinstein down to the jungle in the Darien Gap. And Brett Weinstein, I was down there with Dr. Chris Martinson and others on that trip. Brett asked, you know, something like, who's running this? And I'm like, you know, Brett's an evolutionary biologist, did his PhD work in the jungles of Panama. And so here we are in the jungles. And I said, Brett, nobody runs this thing. I mean, this is the jungle. Nobody runs. There's no person that runs the entire war or runs the entire invasion. All the wars and conflicts I've been in, they're not as simple as just there's just two teams. Often there's like 80 teams, you know what I mean? There's countless teams. There's the Somalis that are coming for their reasons. There's the Haitians that are coming for their reasons. Everybody's coming for different reasons. And then there's the larger, let's say, gravitational field, the World Economic Forum, who's working, of course, with the United Nations to destroy nation states like the United States, to destroy every European country and Japan, and here in Thailand. I mean, for instance, the IOM, the International Organization for Migration, now has an office in Bangkok. I am warning Thai people who are watching this. I am warning you crystal clear. You should shut down IOM. They won't even let anybody close to their office, by the way. It's in downtown Bangkok. We saw UNHCR downtown in Sukhumvit area in a mall taking donations, UNHCR, taking donations to do DNA tests on stateless people, you know, like Hmong people and Karen people, so that they can get citizenship into Thailand. Now, I know what they're really doing because I see UNHCR all over the world. I see them in the Darien Gap. I see them in Mexico. They are working to destroy Thailand, just like they're working to destroy Japan and the United States and Canada. You go up to Canada, Masako Ganaha and I were up in Canada recently, some months ago. That border's wide open. There's more than 4,000 miles of border there. There's people going back and forth every day, both directions. We were down on the border watching this happen. Again, let me say, let's go back to marijuana. I know we left that thing on the table. I have always been more of a libertarian, I guess, is the way you would put it. I'm not sure. But I more or less haven't really cared as long as people stay out of my way, right? Stay out of my life and don't come through my window at night and go ahead, be what you want to be. But as somebody who studies war and spends a lot of time in wars and knows how some of our enemies are fighting, I know that they use drugs and alcohol and prescription drugs and other things to put people in the state of mind for brainwashing so that they can just sit there and say, oh, the border's wide open. Whoosh, you know, like Joe Rogan, what are we going to do? You know, it's like, you know, why are they doing this? Well, whatever the reason is, the fact is they are doing it. And one of the ways that you dumb people down is with drugs, alcohol, prescription drugs. Marijuana now is not the marijuana we once knew. It's not the marijuana from the old days. They don't even call it marijuana here in Thailand. What do they call it? I've forgotten what they call it, but they don't even call it marijuana.
I think you highlight, we're about to go to break, Michael, but I think you highlight a very important point, which is that I'm in agreement with you that we need to be of sober mind, especially in these times. We need to be as sharp as we possibly can be and watching their every move. You need to be in community groups, secure communications with your communities, watching anomalies in your neighborhood, watching, you know, everyone needs to circulate that news about what happened in that church in Texas. Let people know they need to be aware because something is brewing and we don't know who's responsible for this increase in this violence, but we know it's probably coming. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Michael Yon after this short break. We're here with war correspondent Michael Yon. Michael, I recall a previous conversation that we had where we basically spoke about how when people come, especially as illegals, to another country or a Western nation, but even sometimes legally, they find their own tribes, and it is very tribal. You know, Somalis will find Somalis, and Pakistanis will find Pakistanis. And so, obviously, that's what's happening once these people, these illegal aliens, are coming into the United States. They're coming, they're organizing, they're finding their tribe. The problem is that we're not facing people that want to come here and work and contribute to the country. We're facing people that are potentially here to destroy the country. And that is, I think, you know, what we're starting to see. Hopefully we're not going to see too much more of it, but I highly doubt it. We've seen two Middle Eastern looking men that were wearing, according to the people in the church, a Muslim turban, coming there with a rifle, coming there, you know, potentially to attack these people. Was this just a random event or wasn't it? I'll tell you what I am hearing, Michael. A lot of people are noticing more cartel activity in rural neighborhoods. This is what I'm just hearing on the ground. They're starting to notice perhaps some surveillance of the neighborhood going on, strange vans, things of this nature. And I want to know from you, what do you think this type of organization from these groups is going to lead to?
Oh, full-scale hardcore crime, of course. You know, we see a lot of Tren de Agua down in the Darien Gap. Now it seems like every American knows Tren de Agua. We've been watching them come through Darien Gap, and I ask them very often, Tren de Agua, and they'll be like, yeah, I'm, you know, see, you know, and the tattoos on their faces, AK-47, the whole work. You see some of the videos that I put up. So in addition to just hardcore crime, as our economy collapses and the United, as Americans are under attack by the United States, you know, there are other people that are coming for war. Some people are just coming for crime, like the Tren de Agua guys. They're just straight up criminals. But that's indistinguishable actually from war on some levels, right? But then there's others like the Chinese that are coming across in massive numbers. And many of those are just coming across to as migrants, quote unquote, but we're being invaded. But others are coming across and they're growing dope up in Oregon, Washington State, California, Maine, a lot in Maine, Oklahoma, all over the place. And they're, if you read the book, Unrestricted Warfare, you'll see that the drug warfare is one of the main forms of warfare that they do. They've been doing this since forever. That, you know, a lot of people, when I say drugs and Chinese and warfare, they say, oh, they're just getting back for the opium wars, which is complete nonsense. I mean, the Chinese have been doing this themselves since forever, and they were part of the people who did the opium wars. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, these aliens came from England and did all that, and now the whole world deserves their ire, because China is famous for doing drug wars here in Thailand. They're famous for doing drug wars in, like in the 50s and the 60s there in Thailand. You can read about it in, what was a book I read that? Rape of the Mind. Rape of the Mind by Juice Merlu, a 1956 book. And that 1956 book, Rape of the Mind, the Dutch psychologist Juice Merlu was talking about how the Chinese were using drugs in Thailand, where I'm at now, to attack Thailand, to make them as mind control substances. It's used for war. You use money, you use the drug programs to generate cash for war, and you also use it to make people supplicant, right? I mean, it's Soma, it's 1984, it's Animal Farm, you know? Yeah, I mean, Soma. It's all those things coming true.
Yeah. Michael, I'm in agreement. This is absolutely something that's used as a weapon against populations. There is no doubt that China has had huge involvement in fentanyl coming into the country. Fentanyl, I mean, I was just observing this morning, you know, homeless people on the street. I was in America, you know, a couple of decades ago, and in San Francisco, there was a problem back then, but I can't say that I've seen this amount of, you know, devastation prior to now. You know, the last time I was here, I'm looking at all these tents. I was literally driving on the street and a fentanyl zombie was, and it's just such a waste of human life. It's horrendous. You know, I look at this person that God made and know that there's potential for their lives, and they're sitting there looking like that. And he's just walking across the street. He does not care that I've had to stop in the middle of the road so that I don't bowl him over. And he's just totally out of it, looking at me with no life in his eyes. I mean, this is something, a crisis that I've never seen before, and there is absolutely no doubt in my mind, or no one can deny, if you're a radio listener, you can't see what's on the screen right now, but we've literally got person after person bent over, half dead, totally lifeless people that are just addicted to these drugs that are destroying their life, destroying their future, destroying the future potential of this country. Understand, every single one of these humans has potential to contribute positively to this country, and instead they're being zombified. It's just another way to attack humanity, and sadly too many people are allowing themselves to fall victim to this type of warfare. So Michael, what should people be preparing for right now? We have Biden aiming to declare a climate emergency. Just yesterday he said, oh, we're going to intensify this weather, these weather emergencies. Whoops. And so do you think that they're going to even let the next election go ahead?
What election? I mean, at the end of the day, we are in a state of war. And I've been saying this for years. That's why I returned to the United States in August 2020. And since that time, it's been a great deal of time all around the United States watching these drug zombies that you show. I've seen those all over the place and Canada as well. It's terrible. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's not just like one street. Sometimes it's entire sections of town. It's unbelievable. And the Canadian government's handing out drugs. By the way, I just got a message from the friend that you spoke with yesterday in Florida about the fuel. So this is that person. He just sent this text. He said, update on the fuel shortage in Florida. The fuel shortage has finally hit Jacksonville, although a tanker has docked, but that won't last long. It's been described as a moderate shortage, mostly because there are still millions of gallons of fuel, but the fuel is getting harder to find. That's the end of the message.
Well, the other thing people were sort of saying, well, how come this fuel station is telling me that they're out of fuel, but there is still fuel? Well, that's because once a state of emergency is declared, or you have something like a hurricane that we know is coming, then those fuel companies are actually required, in fact, by law, to ensure that they have a certain amount of reserves for emergency services, FEMA if need be, other federal services, ambulances, actual police vehicles, rescue operations. So they actually have to keep that by law for those operations as well. That's something that a lot of people may not understand also.
Right. You know, there's some people like Doc Chambers, you know, Pete Chambers well. He and I, his truck has an extra fuel tank on the back. We drove all the way from Austin area, Dripping Springs, all the way, got almost to Florida before we refueled, and it didn't really need fuel yet. That's prepping right there. But I mean, those who have prepared for these things, obviously, though, there are a lot of serious preppers in North Carolina. I lived in Western North Carolina in a place called Andrews for a couple of years. It's near Murphy. The natural person out there is a prepper. But we also know that a lot of the people, even though they were very well prepared, their entire homes were wiped out. So sometimes, we all know that sometimes you have to count for even all your preps will just be wiped out. And that's why we have to depend on each other, obviously.
Yes.
I think a lot of the places in Florida, the people in Florida are going to need absolutely serious help. This is a Category 5. That means catastrophic destruction. So if you're planning to help people in Florida, now's the time to load up and get serious. I know everybody's getting exhausted because they're helping people in, for instance, North Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee, but it's not over. It's far from over. And the people in Florida are going to need serious amounts of help. In Florida, again, I grew up there. I'm extremely familiar with Florida. I've been all over the place. I love it. But I'm going to tell you what, it's not a nice place to be without electricity. It's very rough. And so people are going to need everything that they can get.
Well, and let me just issue a disclaimer because, you know, just in case people don't understand, this is very, very dangerous. Obviously, don't head into the storm right now. There is an evacuation order. Listen to the authorities. I think DeSantis has the people's best interests in heart. The mutual fuel contact you're talking about said the governor there and the emergency response teams there have been very good. They did warn people in advance, go get extra fuel. You know, it's just unfortunately some people didn't listen. And isn't that always the case? But anyway, I'm not blaming people for there not being enough fuel. I'm just saying, you know, when we know that things like this are happening, just try from now. I'm saying to people, Michael, between now and the election, expect absolutely anything. Be prepared for absolutely anything. Be prepared to help absolutely anyone.
Right. Yeah. And you're right. That's important what you said. Don't head into the hurricane, especially a Cat 5. First thing to do is get off the track. Don't get hit by the train in the face. But as soon as that train passes, there's going to be a lot of devastation and people are going to need help. Now, again, I've spent a lot of time in Florida. I grew up there. And in Florida, actually, I don't see our government. I still see myself as a Floridian. I am a Florida citizen. I don't see my state as predatory like California or New York. It doesn't appear. The state of Florida, for instance, law enforcement, the sheriff's office in Polk County, Florida, is not predatory towards the citizens. In fact, they encourage everybody to own a gun. You know, Sheriff Grady, I voted for him twice, and I'll vote for him again. So, I mean, so it's again, it's not like everybody's predatory, but the law enforcement can only do so much. So we're going to be on our own.
Yeah, it's a very, very dire situation. Absolutely praying for the people of Florida right now. I hope that they're listening to the messaging, which is, I'm told, very trustworthy from the authorities and able to get out of there safely. Again, there is, I've been told, fuel much further north, but people are struggling to get out through, you know, it seems like all the roadblocks are happening north, but we still have a day or so for that to clear out and people to hopefully get out of there and get to safety. Michael, you said before, what election? What did you mean by that?
I mean, we've reached the point. It's very clear that there's so many things that you and I see and others see as well, that the elections clearly have been rigged. I was at the midterms. I was over in Maricopa. I was somewhere in Asia. And I said, I'm going to go back to the United States for these elections. Where should I go out of the thousands and thousands of counties in the United States? Where should I go? So I flew to Maricopa County, Arizona. And sure enough, they clearly stole those elections right in front of my eyes. I mean, I went to two polling sites, and both of the polling sites had problems with the machines.
Yeah.
So they were sending people to other polling sites, which also had problems. I mean, it was stolen right in front of everybody, not to mention the one before. And so, I mean, and now you see we've had millions of people coming in. By the way, if you're overseas, I don't know if people in America see this due to IP addresses, but overseas you'll see that there's people getting emails. There's messages out on like YouTube, how you can sign up to vote via email from overseas. And you don't have to prove that you're a U.S. citizen. You can just vote via email. I bet Americans don't know about that. I mean, this is going to be rigged, obviously. When was the last time we had an election that was not rigged? I do not know, but I know the last two were rigged.
Michael, if you've got a link to what you're talking about, I really want to, if you can send that to me and I'll get that out there and we'll blow this thing up. If people are literally being, if they're actually facilitating people from overseas voting, potentially even just via email, we need to blow this thing up. So send me any information that you have on that and we'll look into it. Okay, so we know definitely that elections all over the world are being questioned. We know that 2020 was stolen. It is a very, very high possibility that they're going to steal it again. What do you think? I want to hear from you both outcomes. The outcome that Trump wins by some miracle, and I hope he does, that Trump wins, what do the Democrats do? Or they steal it, what happens then? Give us both scenarios.
Keep it in mind, I don't look at this as Democrats versus Republicans. This is much bigger than that.
Of course.
Those are just meat puppets, and you know this well. You and I have talked about this, I mean, offline. I mean, you know, when we were together, actually, you know, driving around. I mean, this is clearly much, much bigger. I mean, this is a big game. And so it's happening all over the world. Every country I go to, like I said, it's happening in Japan. It's happening. I spent a lot of time in Japan. In fact, Masako Ganaha is the one that's going to send you. She was just nodding. She's going to send you she's the famous Japanese journalist who's describing these things all over Japan now. We go there, we see the same thing. We see the same thing in Netherlands, Germany, country after country. Luxembourg is essentially gone. You know, I've spent about more than 6 years in Europe, but these last trips that I go there, the people have given up. They're not fighting anymore. They're not fighting for freedom. Is not something you ask for. You don't ask anybody for freedom. Watch the Jones Plantation, by the way. We just watched it twice. Doug Casey said we should watch the Jones Plantation. Again, Doug Casey, for many people watching this, know exactly who I'm talking about. He's the gold man that everybody gets so much advice from on precious metals and those sorts of things. I mean, he's been doing this since the 60s, I guess. And the other night he said, let's watch the Jones Plantation, which we did. We've now watched it twice. If you haven't seen it, watch it. And that describes perfectly what's going on right now. And by the way, when you look at the flag on the Jones Plantation, look, it says JP, right? Jones Plantation. And remember, the guy that gets shot holding up the magnifying glass to his eye, his name was Morgan. Maybe it's a coincidence, JP Morgan. I don't know. But there's a lot of little subtleties in that movie that they're not pointed out to you. But if you watch the movie, make sure you're watching it in a quiet place without distractions. You might want to watch it twice. There it is, the flag, JP. And the guy that got shot soon around that time, his name happened to be Morgan. But anyway, if you watch this film, there he is handing out the fiat cash right there, right? I mean, you know, again, it's time to start thinking about things like real gold. One of the reasons that we've been trapped and Americans have been enslaved, we've been enslaved by debt, right? We've been taught, and the Japanese as well, Americans watching this, most of the young people watching this, have no idea that gold is real money. Silver is real money. The fiat, the paper money that we have, is nothing. It's going to hyperinflate. It's going to all fiat hyperinflate. Here, got to read this book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. If you haven't read this book, you need to read it. It's a very important book. Maybe it's out of focus. The Creature from Jekyll Island. Read this book, and you will see what we're talking about. Gold is actual real money. You need to read that book and you'll understand one of the things that has to be done to rescue the United States and get Americans out of debt is to get rid of the Fed. You got to get rid of the Fed, period. The central banks have become a disease for the United States. You know, of course, we could go into that for hours. I'm not an expert on these things, but I have been studying them quite a lot because this is part of the war. It's not just the borders. It's not just the death jabs. It's not just the whatever's in our foods, whatever's being done with the weather. I do not know. But we're being attacked by many different ways. The drugs, the fentanyl, the quote-unquote marijuana.
The attacks are coming from every single angle. What I want to know, though, is what you think the next month is going to look like, what the possible ways in which they're going to, are they going to activate terror cells? Are they working with these cartels? I mean, as I said, it would have taken some serious coordination to get that weaponry, the 9 surface to air missiles that Doc Pete Chambers confirmed came over the border. It would have taken serious coordination to get that across the border. That doesn't just fly in casually under the radar. So there is coordination going on between people in positions of power and cartels, terrorists, God knows what. Do you think that they're going to potentially start launching false flags, actual attacks? I mean, what sort of things should we be aware of between now and November?
I think there'll be, I mean, our modus operandi is false flags. I mean, and provoked attacks. You know, the Mexican-American War, Grant talked about this, how we provoked the Mexicans to attack us, how we did the same with the Japanese. He didn't talk about that, of course. President Grant was gone by then, but this is the way we operate. Look at October 7th in Israel. That was clearly a Mossad operation. That was amazingly obvious. It was so embarrassingly obvious. It's sad that you have to even explain it to anybody, right? It's like you know, it was clear that, for instance, that it took an entire McDonald's shift before the Israeli Defense Forces did any kind of serious response during the attack on October 7th. That was unbelievably obvious, right? And the cameras just magically didn't work, you know.
Yes, and Michael,
style.
Of course, we have this. We have the anniversary of October 7. Hamas apparently attacked again, and after Israel confirmed that they knew an attack was coming, potentially a full year ahead of October 7, 2023. We still haven't had investigations into the military stand down. We know that Israel has been tracking Hezbollah devices for even longer than the explosions happened, potentially years, but they also didn't see this Hamas attack coming on the anniversary of October 7. Amazing. They missed the guys, you know, amateurs on paragliders. Apparently, you know, we're talking about mountain dwelling, you know, tunnel dwelling amateurs coming in on paragliders, one of the most advanced intelligence, Iron Dome, whatever on earth. This Israel is such an advanced military. We keep being told they do precision military. The IDF operates with such precision, but they couldn't see a bunch of paragliders coming in. And with all the surveillance that they've been doing on Hezbollah and all the other terrorists in the region, I'm not saying they're not terrorists, but they just keep saying that side's terrorists. We're not, even though we've killed 40,000 innocents now, the numbers show. But with all of that, they didn't see this attack coming on the anniversary of October 7 too, right?
Yeah, I mean, that really just, you've got to be amazingly deep in cognitive dissonance not to just see what's happening. That this is, and the war is going to grow. That's clear. It's clear that, you know, Israel, let's just call it Zion Stand. It's clear that they want to take the Suez Canal event. Listen, if you want to take Iran, first you need to take out Hamas. And if you take out Hamas, you can also take that energy off the coast of Gaza, right? That's a big deal. And there's more to it than that. There's also the Indo-European corridor from Mumbai over to UAE through Saudi and Jordan and up through Israel, including through Gaza, right? That's a new corridor that they want to develop and take the Suez Canal. But if you want to take Iran, you need to knock out Hamas, knock out Hezbollah, take out Iran. If you want to take Iran, you also need to address Russia. Or if you want to take out Russia, you need to address Iran. So, I mean, there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. It's not about little Hamas. Those are just pawns on the board. This is brutal. This is absolutely brutal. Tens of thousands of people have died because they're pawns. They were useful idiots. And at the end of the day, Israel itself is being used as a useful idiot. I mean, it's not just Israel. Israel itself is a staked goat, as it were. Like, you'll hear Matt Bracken often talk about the staked goat. Staked goat tactic, which is a tactic that's been used forever. I think the first time I read about staked goat tactics was with Pashtun Fighting British way back when they would, for instance, they would stake an old woman.
We're literally about to be out of time today. I'm so sorry. So we're going to have to wrap it up. I am of the opinion that an American election should be about America first, and America in general should be about America first. Actually, America only. But I understand that there is, you know, that America has allies just as every other nation has allies. The problem is, you know, I highlighted this recently. Australia is an allied nation, but you have the Prime Minister of Australia, who's an absolute fool, a bumbling idiot, and actually doesn't have the best interests of Australians at heart. You have the ambassador to the United States using Australian taxpayer dollars to host drag queen shows in the United States. These people are not allied with humanity. And so right now we have an us versus them being the globalists. And I just think that they're going to pull out all stops ahead of the US election to make things very, very dangerous. I don't know what sorts of various states of emergency they're going to declare, but it's very, very clear that things are heating up. Michael Yon, you can find him at Michael_Yon on X. Give him a follow. And Michael, we're very appreciative of your time today. Thank you so much. Coming up, two special guests. We'll be right back. coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Christina Tobin, who is the founder and chair of the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. She's going to talk to us about an exciting upcoming event. And then at 10:30, you're going to want to stick around. We have a very special guest joining us. Colonel Douglas McGregor is going to be on the broadcast to talk about geopolitical issues, the upcoming election, and much, much more. He also just interviewed Dane Wigington, which I thought was amazing that he was having that conversation. Of course, RFK Jr. as well has spoken with Dane Wigington, and I'm so glad that he's breaking through into the truth-telling world mainstream, if you will, at this point, because he's just been on point for so many years. You can find his work at geoengineeringwatch.org. I encourage everyone to go and watch the film The Dimming. It is fantastic. Fantastic movie, and that's on his website. Really quickly, before our next guest comes on, I promised you all that I'd go through this, so I want to go through it very, very quickly. Essentially, yesterday we spoke about how climate change is being used as a reason for what they call managed retreat, and we discussed how managed retreat will be used to bring people out of rural areas, even out of coastal areas, and into smart cities. But there's also another variable here, and it's where managed retreat is used to develop a smart city. And that is certainly the case with Tampa. And so bear in mind all of the other stuff that we told you, that we covered earlier about, and remember I said I'd go back to this point where FEMA's having this meeting and talking about equity and all this sort of stuff. And it really is this socialist approach where everyone has to be equal. It needs to be a level playing field. And we all need to be poor and dependent on the government together is basically the approach. So Tampa Bay Times, this is an article I found from 2023 talking about how climate change will be a fiscal disaster for many Tampa Beach towns. And it says that climate change is affecting communities nationwide, but Florida often seems like ground zero. They say climate disasters and sea level rise also harm local governments financially by increasing costs and undercutting their property tax bases. And they go on to say the property tax revenues may even decline as insurance companies, remember we're looking at what Zurich was saying yesterday, and property markets downgrade property values to reflect climate impacts, such as increasing flood risks and wildfires. Already a growing number of insurance companies have decided to stop covering some regions and types of weather events, raise premiums and deductibles, and drop existing policies. So this is, people may say, does this mean they're going to wipe out Tampa and not let us live there? No, it doesn't, because this particular aspect, when it comes to Tampa, is actually is how they're going to implement the smart city agenda there. And I know that Tampa is a smart city because you can just go to the Global Covenant of Mayors, not the horse mayors, mayors, M-A-Y-O-R-S, globalcovenantofmayors.com, and go to our cities, and you will find that Tampa is actually listed there as a smart city. So as this region continues to experience probably manufactured weather events, that will be their excuse to move people off the coastline, make sure everyone's there living in an equitable fashion. And I watched one of their Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council summits, which was the Regional Resiliency Summit in May. I didn't watch it. I went through some of the documents that were uploaded in relation to this summit, and it was exactly that. It was like, oh, you know, white people are better off and black people are struggling, and so we need to achieve equity. And some of the solutions that I've seen them put forward include solar panels. They include making sure everyone has electric vehicles. It's all about transitioning people to the smart city agenda. I really want to finish that point, so we've got to go to break. I'm going to spend 2 more minutes on that before we get Christina on right after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's important that people understand this. So just finishing my point from before the break, when I was reading through their documents, basically they say that the people of Florida are to blame essentially for the climate catastrophes that befall Florida. Like Florida hasn't been getting hurricanes forever. Although who even knows if they're real at this point. But I digress. The people of Florida are the reason why climate change is occurring there. And basically, it's all these cars that they keep driving and this CO2 that they keep emitting. And so, therefore, they need to look at managed retreat for the area. So, I want to show you that National Academies actually conducted this study or a workshop, I should say, on relocation and other climate adaptations on Florida's Gulf Coast. They invited some residents along, and you know, this is how they obtained consensus for managed retreat, essentially. But they actually talk about strategically moving communities and infrastructure. So there are certain areas of Florida that they're looking at strategically moving. Tampa is not one of them, because Tampa is listed as a smart city. So it's just important for people to distinguish between managed retreat doesn't necessarily mean you're getting moved out of the area. Managed retreat may mean that, or it may mean your city's going to be managed according to the smart city goals. And they say that they want multi-family housing in Tampa. They want things like everything solar, no electricity. They want things like, no fossil fuel electricity, all solar, which is just pipe dreams. They want all electric vehicles. And these are just some of the solutions that they put forward. And it's really similar to what C40 Cities in conjunction with C40 Cities published in their Future of Cities in a 1.5 Degree World document, which we've been over many, many times. But this essentially says no meat, no private vehicle ownership, no travel, well, 1,500 kilometres per person every 3 years, which equates to roughly 900 miles. No dairy. And basically this is how life is going to be. You're going to eat 3D printed meat off your counter, you know, with grown with cancer cells and nanotech. It's just beautiful, beautiful life. But that's what they have planned for some of these places that they talk about managed retreat in. So I just wanted to be really, really clear about the fact that managed retreat doesn't automatically mean that you are getting moved out of that area at some point. It can also mean that this area will be managed into a smart city. And of course, they want to move people off the coastline because they say that, you know, sea levels are rising. But as we saw just yesterday, when we went through the example of the island of Tuvalu, they have moved an entire island of people from their ancestral homes under the guise that sea levels are rising, but the land has actually increased. And so it's a complete lie. And this is, the people like the ones that we watched in the FEMA meeting are buying into these lies. They're buying into climate change. They're buying into the fact that the government cares about them, when in fact the government does not. And I suppose that's a really good segue into our next guest. Again, her name is Christina Tobin. She is the founder and chair of the Free and Equal Elections Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization that's dedicated to ensuring an open and honest election process in the United States. She's with us today to talk about the next presidential debate that she's holding on October 23rd from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Christina, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Maria. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for covering for Harrison and being a part of InfoWars.
Absolutely. My pleasure and honor. I was, saying that this is a good segue into this next guest because, we don't often hear a lot of candidates talking about, the potential of a climate scam or how the government doesn't actually care about them and is actually doing things to harm them. But I think that's what your presidential debates are actually about, people speaking more freely. Talk to people about this mission.
Yes, Free and Equal Elections, my nonprofit's been hosting presidential debates since 2008. So this will be our fourth round in 2024 and also our fourth presidential debate this election cycle. So we'll be talking about a lot of different issues, from foreign policy to economics to the disasters, naturals or whatnot, disasters and so on, housing, immigration, the topics that, war that we're not discussing at the VP debate. We got the venue, a dream come true venue. It's so high level production. Lady Gaga was shooting there last week. It's a private venue in Los Angeles, and there'll be a couple hundred people in the audience. October 23rd, the debate will take place actually from 8 to 10:30 Eastern. It's expanded to 2.5 hours. We have three presidential candidates confirmed of the third, fourth, and fifth largest political parties, Libertarian Chase Oliver, Green Party candidate Dr. Jill Stein, and Constitution Party candidate Randall Terry.
Yeah, so, you know, I may not necessarily agree with all the viewpoints of, because I had a bit of a look last night at what some of these people are about, and I'm actually, you know, quite opposed to some of those viewpoints, but I'm actually really glad that people are able to have that conversation in an open forum, and this is what I'm trying to get to. My understanding is this is exactly what you're trying to create here.
Yes, I'll be co-moderating it with former U.S. Comptroller General Dave Walker, as well as a co-founder of No Labels. And this is sponsored by Joe from Texas. Another Joe just recently sponsored, key sponsor for the Tucker Carlson tour opening for Every Stop. So we're here to open up more ideas and conversation. Yeah, we don't have to agree with all the ideas. I mean, do most people agree with what the D's and R's candidates? Maybe, maybe not. We're here to bring more voices and more choices and more ideas to the table. It's through the conversations we're going to bring about solutions. And here at Free and Equal Elections, we're bigger than presidential debates. This debate that we're hosting October 23rd will be live on not only Rumble, Scripps News, C-SPAN, KPFK. We'd love for the InfoWars team to come on the site and see this historic debate take place and unfold. It's also going to be the kickoff for the 2025 United We Stand Tour, Free and Equal Election, we'll be presenting next year. It's a much bigger vision. There will be a blockchain voting app. Our blockchain voting app will launch at the end of the debate, where people can cast a vote via ranked choice voting at freeandequal.org. You can go to freeandequal.org and sign up for our live stream today. And you can vote via ranked choice voting. Who is your favorite candidate? And it's going to be on the ledger. So you'll actually be able to see that your vote counts on the blockchain ledger. So we're here for a much bigger vision. And there's a big disenfranchised, people are very disenfranchised by the fact that there's only two political parties. We have many political parties and many independents running for president. And thank you so much for covering our debate. And we're looking forward to addressing the hard-hitting ideas this October 23rd from 8 to 10:30 Eastern.
So talk to us about what the actual idea behind this is, Christina, because, you know, most people would say, well, it's very unlikely that someone other than the two parties, even though most people agree they're fed up with the two-party system, it's very unlikely that someone then other than the two major parties would get in. I can tell you that in Australia, there is a system where independents, you know, do get some media time, some mainstream media time. They even get some time, you know, they get voted in terms of the Senate or in the lower house. We have, you know, members of parliament. We even had an independent running as a presidential candidate last time around. So it's you know, a system where it allows for independents to come in. Is that what you're trying to achieve here? What is the main goal?
Maria, that's a great question. The reason we have the same two parties getting reelected over and over again, most of us, your viewers, know, it's a business. Dr. Ron Paul said they're all friends behind the scenes. I mean, Representative Thomas Massie, what an honor at our July debate this last July. It was at Freedom Fest, and I sat next to Representative Thomas Massie coming out and talking about both Democratic and Republicans in office, Congress, and more are funded by entities like AIPAC and many others. We're here to change the game. Technology is a game changer, and the blockchain ledger, what we're creating, will evolve into an app, which will list every single candidate, these are third parties, independent candidates, which many of them will be invited on the United We Stand tour next year, which will bring together artists, thought leaders, organization, candidates, independents, all parties. They need a platform to have a truly free and equal elections, free and equal, that is, chance of winning. And so here at Free and Equal Elections, we recognize the flaws of the electoral system created by the two-party system, from the restrictive ballot access barriers. It takes over 900,000 signatures for an independent to get on the ballot. Well, it's only, you know, 30 to 50,000 for D's and R's. In fact, I have a petitioning company. It's gathered millions of signatures to get candidates on the ballot. In this cycle, I helped Robert F. Kennedy Jr. through the Super PAC American Values get on the ballot in a few states as well. I've also worked for Ralph Nader in 08, gathering over 500,000 signatures to get him on the ballot as an independent. So I stand personally as an independent, and I foresee with more independent voters than there are, D's and R's alike, there's going to be independent movement that ignites. Right now, we have an insular right forming through the Kennedy, Gabbard, Trump, and that's great. That's part of the process, but the movement's going to be across the spectrum, and that's where Free and Equal Elections and the United We Stand Tour comes into play. You can go to more to freeandequal.org for more details, but we're going to address the flaws of the electoral system, from the voting machines to the fact that we don't have alternative voting methods, and we're going to bring that to the surface, and we're going to elect candidates targeting Congress in 2026 across the spectrum to replace Deese and Narza like with a whole bunch of candidates like Thomas Massey across the spectrum.
And how, I'm presuming for this to really be as impactful as you know, your vision for it is, that you would need to get the D's and the R's, the main candidates on board and involved in these debates. How would that work? I mean, do you think that in future that that's where this is heading, that they would come on? Because we even see, you know, them arguing about, you know, turning up to certain debates as it is with each other, let alone going and doing something new like this.
I welcome Trump and Harris to be at our debate. I think in 2028, we're going to see independent or independent candidates for president running, whether there's going to be party lines that are established where some of the Kennedy lines get 5% of the vote where they're considered party, and or no labels. I mean, our, you know, co-moderator for this debate is also the co-founder of No Labels. So we're going to see a lot of more independents that are going to break through the paradigm. Kennedy almost did, but we saw what the system did to keep him from doing that. So I would say for our debates in the future, even now, there is a chance Trump, as I do more interviews with you guys, I would love to this day, I haven't interviewed with Mr. Alex Jones. I love what he's done, Steve Bannon. The system has wrongfully attacked him, and we welcome him and many others on the United We Stand tour. I welcome D's and R's to be in our debate in 2028, but I have a feeling we're going to have candidates or even a candidate much larger than Kennedy in 2028, an independent that's going to be participating in our presidential debate.
So what sort of questions can people expect or topics can people expect would be addressed at your debates that don't normally get discussed? You know, can you give us an example from the last debate that you held, things that may be very controversial that weren't brought up in the, you know, mainstream debates?
I mean, the war, right? Israel, Lebanon, Gaza, what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, and these few powerful people that are dividing us. And we're going to address those sort of issues. I have the topics here from economy to foreign policy, domestic disaster response, public health, border security, immigration, education, healthcare. We want to get into energy and environment, censorship, student loans, public health. Those are the topic of the discussions, and we welcome people. We're actually taking questions from social media and comments from people to submit into the debate. So those are the sort of topics we're going to be discussing, the top 3-5 issues that people want to really hear. And unfortunately, the VP debate failed to address, and TV networks should not be hosting debates. They're biased. Look at the money. Follow the money. That needs to stop happening. And here at Free and Equal Elections, as a nonprofit organization, we're here to hold a truly open debate. And I ask candidates not to attack one another. This is not about a character attack. This is about going after the ideas and having that discussion. And to date, all of our candidates have always been respectful towards one another. That's important to get the best, let the best ideas prevail. And it's been an honor working with the candidates that we've had to date at our debates.
Well, that's really great. It sounds like a great vision, a great initiative. Let people know again, Christina, where they can find out more information and again, where they can watch this debate coming up on October 23rd.
Oh, thank you. Go to freeandequal.org. You can sign up for the live stream and watch it again on Rumble, Scripps News, C-SPAN, KPFK, and more Rising. Go sign up for the live stream and really get ready to vote for your favorite candidate. We're also at the end of the presidential debate going to announce the launch of the United We Stand Tour. United We Stand Tour will be launching at the end of the debate. So yes, go to freeandequal.org. Thank you so much, Maria and InfoWars, for staying strong up against a flawed system, not only beyond the electoral, but also we know mainstream media is flawed as well as the music industry. And these are sort of things that United We Stand is going to bring all of the conscious artists, thought leaders, independent media together. So freeandequal.org, check out the debate. And thank you so much again for having me and for the whole InfoWars team, for you guys existing out there.
Amazing.
Get the message out.
Thank you so much for making the time to come on, Christina. We appreciate it. I wanted to get through a couple of clips actually really quickly before Colonel Douglas McGregor comes on, because I thought this was very, very important. I don't suppose I'll get through them all, but team, if we can just talk about, bring up the clip of Elon talking about the Epstein client list and what's going to happen if Trump gets elected versus Kamala elected. But let's go to clip 12 first.
But you'll just say whatever words are on the teleprompter. So, you know, it's really whoever controls the teleprompter is the actual sort of that's who's actually in charge.
And who is that, do you think?
Well, I've tried to pin it down. It's not like any one kind of mastermind. It's not like it seems to be. It's like Kamala is sort of a marionette with, you know, a thousand puppet masters type of thing. Like not it's or maybe it's somewhere north of 100 is what it seems like.
Yes. I bet you know 80 of them.
I probably know most of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just by virtue of your job and what you've been doing for the last 30 years, I mean, you've,
yeah.
And I should say, I think you voted for Biden.
I'd like to see a matchup of those, like, call it the top 100 puppet masters on the FDN client list.
Do you think there's some overlap?
Strong overlap. Strong overlap.
When are we going to see that list, do you think?
I don't know. It's mind-blowing they've not tried to prosecute even one, not even the worst offender on the Epstein client list. They've not even tried to prosecute even one. That's insane.
Well, because they have a lot of diabetic grandmothers who were outside the Capitol on January 6th. They're kind of occupied.
Yeah, I mean, they've put like, whatever, 500 or 600 January 6th protesters in prison and not one person on the Epstein client list.
Will that ever come out, do you think?
You know, I think part of why Kamala is getting so much support is that if Trump wins, that Epstein client list is going to become public.
Yes.
And some of those billionaires behind Kamala are terrified of that outcome.
Yeah. Do you think Reid Hoffman's uncomfortable?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Gates.
Yeah. And I only ask that because you can sort of just look at them and you're like, that's a nervous person right there. I don't know. I mean, I assume you know them. Yeah.
Yes. Reid Hoffman was my vice president of business development at PayPal.
Yeah.
24 years ago.
So Kamala's billionaire backers are terrified that the Epstein client list is going to become public if Trump wins the election. That's Elon Musk's analysis. There's a couple of other clips we were going to play, but I don't know that we'll have time. Elon basically says that if Trump loses, that he's screwed. He's potentially going to face prison time. And he also says that basically X is gone if Kamala wins. And I think that that's because free speech is gone if Kamala wins. But this particular, you know, naming of Reid Hoffman and of Bill Gates is really fascinating. I just had a bit of a look at Reid's Wikipedia page. He's a board member at Microsoft. He's been a member of the Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations. You've also got him co-founding LinkedIn, which I was permanently banned from. That was fun. My entire, you know, professional career just deleted in a moment because I told the truth about injections. Peter Thiel, a colleague of Hoffman at PayPal, invested in LinkedIn. And, you know, that's concerning. That's concerning, but maybe some of these people are waking up. I don't know. In late 2022, Hoffman and others invested a total of $2.2 million in Justice Text, which is geared toward public defenders. That is AI judiciary, everyone, that is removing the judicial system and replacing it with AI. That is the AI World Society UN agenda right there. And we have Hoffman has dismissed calls to pause the development of AI advanced systems, calling such ideas foolish and anti-humanist. Instead, he's called for the pace of development to be accelerated to help humans solve societal problems, to transform areas like healthcare, giving everyone a medical assistant. That is the eradication of doctors, by the way, and hooking you up to the AI hive mind at all times. Your medical assistant will be connected to the nanobots in your body, and you don't need to go to the doctor anymore because your AI will tell you exactly what's going on with your body at all times. That's what that means. And education, so replacing teachers. And I recently spoke about how how teachers at a university in Australia are complaining because now they're going to be replaced by AI. So they complied with the mandates, they complied with the system, and then they go, why is the system chewing us up now? Because you accelerated the Great Reset with your compliance. You silly, silly humans, we tried to warn you. And so I find it very, very interesting that these characters that are always involved with accelerating the Great Reset and accelerating the AI World Society and the UN agenda and the globalist agenda also happen to be associated with Epstein all the time. Isn't that fascinating? And it's really interesting when we were reporting on Media Blackout a little while ago on Epstein and his connections to the UN and, you know, being able to get some model into a really high position in the UN through his connections. What sort of strings was Epstein pulling in the UN? Why does the UN dislike Trump so much? Why is the UN terrified of another Trump administration? Why is Trump not terrified of the Epstein list? Why is Elon not terrified of the Epstein list? How come those that seem to be fighting for humanity and standing for the right things aren't scared of the Epstein list, while those that are actively working towards our destruction are? These people always end up having these shady ties to shady people, to really, really sick stuff going on in the background. And so I thought that that was very, very interesting that Elon Musk said that. And he also spoke about the government efficiency departments, that he wants to, you know, chop it. I've said on multiple occasions that I'm all for that. I just really hope that the solution proposed is not AI government. We can't go down that path. We need to maintain human beings in government. Sure, we can use AI and computers to help us along, but we can't get to the point where we don't have human oversight. And we certainly shouldn't have AI that's being trained by people who want to destroy us, spitting back policies to us at a later stage. We need to avoid that at all costs. After the break, we've got Colonel Douglas McGregor. I am very excited to speak with him. Don't go anywhere and share this broadcast with everyone. We're just waiting to connect with our next guest, Colonel Douglas McGregor, who I'm very, very much looking forward to speaking to. A common sense, level-headed person that is, whose voice, in my opinion, needs to be amplified all over the world right now. But we have some major escalations occurring worldwide. That's no secret to anyone. Just yesterday, Ukraine preparing false flag chemical attack, senior Russian defense official claims. Let me just say that anything coming out of the out of Russia thus far when it comes to Ukraine in terms of the bioweapon labs and statements that they've made about these things, I've personally verified myself. Like when the Russian Ministry of Defense said there were biological labs in Ukraine, there are ties back to Hunter Biden. These were things that Karen Kingston uncovered. She's a former Pfizer employee, biotech analyst, and it was very, very clear that the information that they were delivering was accurate on that. They even mentioned Karen Kingston at the time. This latest headline, Russian troops in August revealed facts of Ukraine's covert use of chemical weapons under the guise of smoke shells. That was Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, the head of the troops of radiological, chemical and biological defense of the Russian armed forces, said on Monday. And Sputnik reported that Kirillov said that Moscow has evidence that Ukraine is preparing to stage a chemical weapons attack on itself to blame Russia. And he says that Moscow has information about Ukraine's preparation of false flag attacks aimed at accusing Russia of using toxic substances during the special military operation. They're still calling it that. Lest I be accused of being a Russian propagandist, again, everything that I've seen that comes out of the MOD in Russia, I've backed up so many of their claims. I've been able to verify so many of their claims. And so Kirillov has said that he will provide the said proof of this planned false flag attack to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Sputnik reported Monday that the Russian MOD claimed that Ukrainian forces have used chemical shells in the Russian town of Sudza within the Kursk region. Russian troops in August revealed facts of Ukraine's covert use of chemical weapons. And Kirillov also stated on Monday that Russia had not received a substantive response from the OPCW as of yet. He said that back in July, the U.S. ambassador to the OPCW, Nicole Champagne, explained the shipments by claiming that the Russian military routinely targets Ukraine with riot control agents and chemical weapons. Kirillov, however, dismissed the allegations as completely unfounded, recalling that the OPCW had already confirmed in 2017 that Russia had completely destroyed all of its chemical weapons stockpiles. The destruction process was monitored both by the agency and inspectors from Western countries, including the US. So there's actually, you know, evidence, he says, that those were destroyed. Now, do they have more? It's very hard to know when it comes to the fog of war, who's telling the truth, who isn't. I'm certainly not claiming that everything that Russia says is absolutely 100% above board every single time. But when I've heard Kirillov speak, generally, I've been able to independently verify the things that he's saying. So that is important. We have a message from Alex Jones on a new product. Let me just say again, it is vitally important to support InfoWars in this time. This platform gives a voice to some of the most important people that are pushing for the freedom of humanity, that are fighting for the freedom of humanity during this time. And so we want to go to a clip very quickly and a message from Alex Jones.
This is something that's next level and something I'm going to be talking a lot about. And I only bring you things that are game changing. But of everything we've ever put out, this is the game changer. If you think X2 and X3, Deep Earth Crystal Ionum, are game changing, they are. Nobody ever put this out until I started 12 years ago. If you get a DEA license from Deep Earth Crystals on the ground, it goes right into your bloodstream. It does amazing things. The only thing you could say might be as good or maybe even better is CMOS, and that's why it's been all the rage the last few years, because it has no mercury in it, unlike fish, but it's bioavailable because it's in the special type of CMOS, and it delivers all these super nutrients and the ring structures of how the nutrients are together bound with the iodine and other things does incredible things in the body. So if you want energy, libido, stamina, immune system, your skin to look beautiful, if you think the iodine was great, this is next level. It's the ultimate CMOS gummies. It's a concentrate. It's super strong. It will blow you away. It'll take a week or so for the effects for you to start seeing, and after taking it for a month, it's incredible. I've been taking these for over a month. It's one of the reasons that I'm so much healthier and look so much better. And now it's available to you exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com. There's a lot of CMOS out there, and a lot of it's great. This is the highest quality you're going to get, and it supports the broadcast. That's why you should get it from us, thealexjonesstore.com. Promotes healthy digestion, improves skin health, supports joint and muscle health, boosts energy levels, improves mental health, supports thyroid health. CMOS is a natural source of iodine in a key type, which is in the plant, so it goes differently into the body, which is essential for maintaining healthy thyroid function, helping regulate your metabolism and hormone production. Rich in nutrients that are in a just super organic, bioavailable form. It all goes together. It's next level. CMOS is packed with vitamins and minerals like iodine, iron, magnesium, potassium, vitamins A, C, and K. These nutrients support overall health, including immune function and energy levels. And so you need to get it. It's next level. Ultimate CMOS, the latest supplement with bladder, rack, and burdock root. And it is just the ultimate formula. Nobody has got something at this quality. This is the best from the top manufacturer that lets us private label it. There's only one other place to get it. There's hundreds of brands of this. This is the best. This is the best. At thealexjonesstore.com. It'll blow you away, and it keeps us on air one way or another. Go down to thealexjonesstore.com. There's some new t-shirts there as well. Be sure to check those out at thealexjonesstore.com.
All right, couple more items we need to go through as we're just aiming to connect with our guest. Banking on betrayal, UK government's new plan for mass bank spying. The controversy is in many ways similar to how governments push for the erosion of online encryption, which gives them massive surveillance powers, but portrays it as a necessity for law enforcement to do its work. So civil rights advocates may be saying stop bank spying, but authoritarian presenting governments are sure to be thinking who better to spy on you with. Banks not only have fine-grained information about their clients' financial situation, but also their behavior and habits. As recent incidents, for example, in Canada, but also the UK, in different circumstances show, they are not above using their power to debank and therefore censor people on behalf of governments. As someone who's personally been on the receiving end of being debanked, thanks ING, partner of the World Economic Forum, it is very uncomfortable, and it is a shadow of the social credit system and a digital currency and your digital ID being linked to your bank account, where based on your behavior, you have your bank account switched off. In my case, I was given 7 days to move my funds. When you have a digital currency system linked to your digital ID, it will be instant. Maybe not straight away. You know, initially they'll ease people into it, just like they've been conditioning us for years through the debanking process. But eventually it will be an instant thing. And so this time in the UK, the Labour cabinet looks set to bring back a legislative plan that would give financial institutions new mass surveillance powers. As before, the premise, activists say it is combating welfare fraud. Of course, it's always about fraud. It's about welfare fraud. And, of course, the tax-paying citizens go, oh, well, yeah, get those welfare scammers. We're all for that. And then you have the money laundering fraud angle. Oh, well, I always do the right thing. I don't launder money. Why shouldn't these criminals be prosecuted? Let me remind you that the police can turn up to your door for a social media post. The FBI will come to your door for a social media post. It's not very hard for them to track those sorts of crimes, but it's just so impossible for them to track welfare fraud or embezzlement or things of this nature. They just can't catch pedophiles. They can't bust pedophile rings. They can't catch welfare fraudsters. They can't catch people that embezzle funds, but they can very quickly catch you if you're opinion doesn't align with the government. Isn't that amazing? Wow. They're not advanced to take down pedophile rings. Just not too long ago, there was a report that the UK managed to take down a pedophile ring that took them 10 years to find these people. 10 years! And yet you post something the government doesn't like on social media, sometimes the same day they're at your house. Explain that to me. Explain that to me. They take your opinions more seriously than they take the actual abuse of children. And I don't care how many times they tell me, oh, they have dedicated teams and these things take a while and they want to make sure they're thorough and all of that sort of stuff. Well, how many times have they turned up to a pedophile ring, you know, a suspected pedophile ring? All they have to do is have suspicion that you've said something naughty on the internet about you don't like your prime minister's haircut and they're at your door the next minute. What, you, if you have a suspected pedophile ring, you can't turn up and see what's going on there? You can't get a warrant for that? You have to spend 10 years investigating before you take down two people? It's really bizarre. It's really, really bizarre to me. And so anyway, in a letter to the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, Liz Kendall, the privacy group and a number of like-minded allies informed the official that they oppose the fraud, error and debt bill and refer to it as work to usher in mass financial surveillance powers in the UK. this time via banks, with the Department for Work and Pensions as the government actor. These Orwellian new powers will force banks to flag people who meet secret criteria to the government, Big Brother Watch says in all its in its call to action. The group also pointed out that when it comes to fraud involving taxpayer money, the authorities already have sufficiently strong powers to go after suspects and access their bank statements. Exactly. This is my point. They have access to absolutely everything. Our phones are listening to us all the time, and governments have unbelievable access to our online activity, to our internet searches, and even our thoughts, I would say. I wanted to mention to you as well, I spoke about that interview with Hope and Tavon that I conducted about the Mark of the Beast stuff. I was going to go through that today, but we had so much else to talk about and guests and so on and so forth. So I'm going to do that tomorrow. I'm going to go through some of the key things from that interview. Again, if you haven't seen it, it's up on band.video. It's up on the homepage of zmedia.com, zeeemedia.com. I'm just aware that we're still having some connection issues with our guests. So I hope we can get that sorted before the end of the hour, although our time with him will be limited. But I think, you know, it's amazing to me watching how all of this chaos, all of this destruction is happening to the economy, to our social fabric, to, you know, more and more draconian laws are being introduced. More and more people are dying from drug overdoses. People are getting sexually assaulted in the United States, even killed on the streets from these violent illegals that are coming in, these criminals that are coming into the country. And the Biden administration still has time to think about climate change and digital ID. The UK government having massive, massive problems with social cohesion. They're not trying to fix that. They're actually just demonizing the white people that are saying, this is not the country I grew up in. I don't really like little kids being raped by violent migrants. And what can we do about it? And you're in jail and the violent rapist is out. And you just look at their priorities and look at the fact that it's happening in every single country and tell me that this is not a lockstep operation in line with UN replacement migration, in line with the smart city agenda to force people into smart cities through various means, like we've been talking about for the past couple of days. Tell me that it's not lined up with the digital ID agenda. Tell me that it's not lined up with the digital currency agenda. It's all coming together for the greater goal, which has always been the mark of the beast. That is undeniable. That is their number one priority. And so we will dig into that more tomorrow. But I expect that if how do I say this? I really, really hope, and I believe that this is the case for the viewers that watch this broadcast. I believe that you all see the full picture of the agenda. I believe that you all see the links between digital currency, CBDC, smart cities, Internet of Everything, AI. You know, I believe that you see it all, but sometimes people need some help connecting those dots. And so when we talk about that particular aspect of the interview and the sensors inside the body and all of that stuff tomorrow, I'm going to try and connect some of those dots just in case. And even if you know, even if you get it fully, that's the interview I'm talking about. Seriously, watch it, share it, get it out there. Get it out there, guys. Share that. Watch it and share it. It is really seriously bombshell information. And I'm not just using that word to be bombastic. It really is. I came out of that saying, wow. And I'm not often astounded by what I find because I guess in a way we become desensitized to just how serious this all is at times when you're, you know, constantly in this research and you see how dark their plans are and you see how evil it is and just how much control these people want to have over every aspect of your life, whether it be your movement, whether it be your job, whether it be how much you earn, which, by the way, they want you to earn nothing. Whatever the case may be, you see and you go, oh, my gosh, this is the worst thing ever. And then you just keep seeing more and more and more of it. And at some point it's like, oh, my gosh, this is all the worst thing ever. And I don't feel, you know, overwhelmed by it anymore. And maybe that's God's gift as well, that lack of feeling overwhelmed. I believe that he strengthens us for these times. I think it's the most exciting time to be alive. In fact, Michael Yon said that to me once. He said, this is the most exciting time to be alive, not because we enjoy what's happening, but because we really have the opportunity to make a difference, or as a bare minimum, stand out to those who don't realize and help save them from the storm that is liberalism, from the storm that is globalism. Help pull them out of the rubble that the current administration has created for them. Help pull them out from the rubble that the UN agenda has caused in every single country, particularly the West. And there are two bills right now. Team, can you bring up Prevent Genocide 2030.org.org. I want to make sure I get the names of those two bills correct. That's Prevent Genocide 2030.org. And a little bit down the page, there is a House bill and a Senate bill that has to do with defunding the United Nations, not just defunding, but actually completely decoupling from the UN. That's what we need. And I think it needs to be, go a little bit down on that page. This is, United Nations is the beast. Get the US out of the UN now. And a little bit further down, it should give me the names of those two bills. Let me have a look. This is Dr. Rima Labo's website. I can't see them right now. I don't want to subject the viewers to me trying to figure it out. So if you just go on to preventgenocide2030.org, Dr. Rima Labo's made it really simple. She's got a few different steps that you can take. You just click a button. You contact your local representative. You support these two bills. Again, it's a unique situation because there's a bill in the House and in the Senate right now to exit the UN. And I can't stress enough how important this is. The UN is a major driving factor, whether you think they're powerful or not. It's not really about that. I'm not even saying that they're necessarily the tip of, the head of the snake. I'm not necessarily saying that. What I am saying is that when they put out policies, like last year, they put out this document, and you have to sort of be familiar with how they operate to find this stuff. But, you know, you go in, it's buried under all this stuff, and then you find that they say, oh, churches have to start sharing the message, particularly churches have to start sharing the message that LGBT rights are above religious freedoms, and especially Christians need to start teaching this in churches. And then all of a sudden you see all these churches with rainbow flags, which is completely, not the Christian message. Not we hate that we hate you because you're gay. Not that, but it's like we don't just go and promote sin in church. It's not about that. We promote change, repentance, and changing your life, surrendering it to Christ. But all of a sudden, after the UN publishes this, because the NGOs get a hold of it, and then through all of their networks, it filters through. And this is why we teach students about sex when they're 4 years old, 5 years old in schools. This is why even in daycare centers in Germany, they were starting to talk to toddlers about this stuff. It all comes from the UN, which is like the policy head of the machine that then trickles down like a cancer into all facets of society. So this is very, very important for people to understand and push, really. The fact that the UN's terrified of another Trump administration tells me that we're in good company. We're in good company. There are some things that I'd like to see addressed. Trump has in one breath said no more wars and then spoken about going after Iran. And I think, he needs to be very, very clear. No more wars, no CBDCs. He said that many times. No end to gas vehicles, no EV mandates. These things are all very, very important. And I hope he starts to educate people on where this stuff actually comes from, where it's being driven from. It's not just the Democratic Party that's doing this. It's literally a worldwide agenda. And I think, and I hope, that if and when he becomes president, he will reveal a lot more of that to the population. I really hope so. This is what I'm holding out hope for, because Trump, people knew the media was lying previously, but it wasn't until Trump that the term fake news really became something that everyone's familiar with. We have President Trump to thank for that, for making that revelation so widely known that the media just lie constantly, constantly. And so I'm grateful. I'm grateful that more and more people are waking up. I'm grateful for President Trump. I'd like to see some of the savagery of the previous campaign. A lot of people have been saying that, but by the same token, the country and the worldwide situation is very delicate and fragile right now. And I perceive his approach to be one that is sensitive to that. I still think that he's the same tough Trump he used to be, but he's just being mindful of the world that we're living in today, and the fact that the political climate in every country is a lot more volatile than it was in 2020. People have been through a lot more. People have been traumatized by their own governments. Their government's been trying to kill them for the past several years. And I really think that with RFK Jr., that that is all going to come to light. I really do. Unfortunately, we couldn't connect with our guest, Colonel Douglas McGregor, today. And I'm hoping that very, very soon we'll be able to speak with him again. That is okay. You can follow him on X, Doug A. McGregor. I actually really recommend it. He's speaking a lot of common sense right now when it comes to ending wars, putting America first. And I just have so much respect for this man. So hopefully I can speak with him soon. Make sure you support InfoWars at thealexjonesstore.com. You can win to enter this really, really cool Ram, which goes off-road and looks really badass, if I'm honest. And by the same token, you're supporting InfoWars, one of the most important broadcasts in this world, and I mean that wholeheartedly. So support Alex, support InfoWars, and get yourself some cool merch. Alex Jones is coming right up. I'll see you tomorrow.